City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Diana Hamilton with the victory praise. Ushering us into a new season of abundance. It's a new harvest. And what a way to start the new month. A massive downpour this morning. Heavy rains, actually. Wherever you are, please drive safely. Drive safe wherever you are. Even as we welcome the new month with praise, singing a new song to the Lord. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. That's the message. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. The seasons are here. What seeds are you putting into your fields? The sun will shine again, the rain will fall, but the harvest belongs to those who put in the effort. Because this man up there, our Father in heaven, he makes the sun shine both on the righteous and on the unrighteous. But he also charges us then to love our neighbors and to love our enemies as well. Not just love those who love us, but love those who do not love us, love those who persecute us. What a call. So this new month, make it a duty to love those who find it hard to love you. Yeah, that's tough, but which is easier to do? You are called to do tough things. We're singing along. It's Workers' Day, May 1, International Labor Day. And for businesses this morning, I saw a very apt text in scripture, and I thought it would work for Workers' Day. 1 Timothy 5:18. It says, for the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. You shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. Business sense for World Labor, International Labor Day. There is dignity in labor. We have heard that a lot of the times. And indeed, we must enjoy the dignity of labor. What's more dignifying than a laborer earning his wage, a laborer deserving his wage? Business says this morning is very simple. Pay your workers and pay them well. And when you pay them well, pay them on time. It helps give value to the saying that there is dignity in labor. very often the new generation is accused of being lazy and wanting quick money and everything, not wanting to work as hard and long and not being as loyal as the older generation. Many have observed the fortunes of the older generation, worked really hard for so long and been so very loyal. But many times those who have the power to reward their wage, to make them deserve their wage, withhold their wage from them. And so many teachers have retired paupers, many health workers, many genuine, honest, principled wage workers, laborers, have gone into pension in penury. If you want to actually dignify labor, glamorize labor, and make younger people want to work, sweat for what they deserve, do not muzzle the ox that threats out the grain. What you don't reward is actually greater than what you reward. And the price you pay for what you don't reward will go a long way to help the society. So do not withhold a laborer's wages from him. You charge workers all the time to have integrity and be honest. And that is very important. In fact, workers, have integrity and be very honest. Honesty is the best policy. But rewarders of workers, do not withhold their wages from them. Do not push them and later tell them to be honest. That's disingenuous. Business Sense this morning, brought to you by ADB. ADB is proud to associate with Business Sense this morning. Come to our branches across the country. We know there is dignity in labor, and we want to reward you for all your hard work and your big plans. So pass by, we have longer tenors. We have loans for both salaried and non-salaried workers. Our customers as well as non-customers. So pass through any of our branches quickly, and let's do good by you. This is 97.3 City FM, and this is your favorite show in the morning. We call it the City Breakfast Show. It's a very rewarding show. You leave here refreshed, energized, informed, entertained, inspired to do right by yourself and by your neighbor. This is our nation. This is our country. Let's make it work by putting in the good work, putting in the hard, long work, knowing that our labor in the Lord will not be in vain. The WhatsApp line is 0549-986-996, 0549-986-996. Send us your birthday messages. Send us your comments for our conversations we'll be having. It's a holiday, and so as you know, the newspapers will not be in. I'll bring you the online news review. Let's have a great show together, shall we?
City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Every time is worship time.
Kofi Owusu Pepra, wonderful rendition, harmonizing some 91. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I say of the Lord, He's my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the foulest snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you'll find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. Come on, today we are praying all day. In fact, for the best part of the day, family consecration, but that's how we call it. It's happening at the Oil Dome. Pass by, let's pray together for our family, our community, our nation. It's an initiative of 97.3 City FM City TV. In the studio now, though, the man, Ni Obodai Nathan Kwal, he joins me in the studio because Fidelity Bank is helping us bring you the news review online. Fidelity Bank says the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System, PAPS, is now live at Fidelity Bank. Imagine sending money to your loved ones or business partners across Africa instantly and in Ghana cities. Do not wait for days for transactions to clear. No more expensive fees. Just fast, secure, and affordable payments. PAPS is here, and Fidelity Bank makes sending money through PAPS easy. So visit any Fidelity Bank branch and start sending money across Africa instantly, securely, and affordably to Nigeria, Gambia, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Fidelity Bank, believe with us. Oh, It's a rainy morning, Nathan. The rains are upon us.
Yes, 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 they are.
And it's like they it's are. Saying, I yeah, was, it's a new month and I'm here with you.
Yes, yes, yes. Wonderful. It, I think it's a great way to start the day. I just hope it will not rain for long. Because in Accra, if it rains for 2 hours, we have a problem on our hands.
It's an issue, right? So while the farmer is praying for rain because our agriculture is largely rain-fed for the... You know, the destitute on Accra streets, or even people who have their homes, and because some people are built on waterways and things like that, once it rains, then there is an issue.
Yes,
same rain giving blessing to others, and then for others, putting them through trouble.
But that's the paradox of life.
Very interesting one there.
But anyway, just a quick note on the song you played.
Yes,
so it's put together by Kofi, what's his name? Kofi Osu-Pepra.
Osu-Pepra, yes.
Okay, you know, his dad wrote the original.
Yeah.
I was stunned to hear that. Yeah. So he visited our church and then he said oh, many years ago his dad wrote a song, so he'll share it with us today.
His dad is more, this is more contemporary.
Of course.
So the difference between the old one, you hear the minyamie,
the new one has more fire.
Those kind of things. That kind of stuff. It's a beautiful one.
Wonderful
he did
song.
That together with his dad, actually.
I see.
His dad was just backing in the background. And I love it. Generation after generation.
It's a wonderful song.
Yeah,
a song that speaks to God's power, God's provision, God's protection.
I love it.
And the assurance we have.
My goodness.
We put our trust in Him.
Absolutely. So don't fear. Don't fear the pestilence at night.
You don't have to
at all.
Yeah. Fear not.
That'll be the whole story. We'll take you online this morning because the newspapers, as they usually do, have abandoned us on a rainy morning and a holiday, actually. So we'll go on. I'm not seeing a lot of labor-related stories yet. I'm sure as the day unfolds, we'll see a lot of the parades and the messages that will come through from labor. But on City FM, citynewsroom.com, thousands to gather. In fact, thousands have gathered for City TV, City FM's annual family consecration service, which is ongoing at the Oil Dome this time around. So if you're listening to us and you're heading towards Accra, or you're in Accra heading towards the venue for the family consecration service, it's happening at the Oil Dome at the Obechebi Lamte interchange. Still on citynewsroom.com, Yagbonwura was never asked to stand and greet Akufo-Addo. This is Chief Tansy Ministry clarifying what has become a controversial video. We must aggressively reach out to disgruntled MPP members. This is Adriso MP elect, and the Adriso by-election. I didn't bribe EC officials. This is Professor Kingsley Nyako clarifying a video that has made the rounds. You know, it's funny. The reporter was giving live updates on TV, and the member of parliament was seen behind the scenes. In the foreground, was seen in the background exchanging an envelope. Handing an envelope to an electoral official.
Mm-hmm.
And where is this proper? And now he's clarifying that he didn't bribe the EC officials.
Okay, we'll get into that.
The OSP must be interested in this matter.
We'll get into the details of that one.
You go to some other stories. NPP's Kwabena Boateng wins. That's still on Adriso. We'll bring back Adriomi, Stephen, and team assuring a lot of Adriso-related stories here. And then SML hits back at KPMG, says we accrued 14 billion Ghana cedis for government and not 2 billion. Okay, that's an interesting one. So these are some of the stories on citynewsroom.com. And Narcotics Control Commission seizes 20.5 kg of cannabis. Chief of Staff hands over new headquarters to REAC, U.S. Army major convicted for smuggling guns to Ghana in barrels of rice and home goods, and boxer and MMA fighter Francis Ngannou's 15-month-old son Kobe dies.
Yes, he shared that on socials. If you go to myjoyonline.com, mm-hmm. military officer shot dead over land dispute in Kaswa.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. The Ejisuba election stories are also here. MPP retains Ejisu seat as Kwabena Boateng polls 55.8%.
Yeah.
Chieftaincy minister says chiefs standing up to greet the president at public events is apt. Of course, this is an update on all the stories that made rounds concerning Ayagbonre and all of that. Why would I bribe election officials in public? Ask Kingsley Nyakun. Of course, this is in relation to the Ejisu by-election. Mustafa
Where would he have done it?
Mustafa Grande is also saying MP who allegedly bribed EC agents must be arrested. Other stories. WAEC reacts to private schools' threats to boycott BC Wasi over exorbitant charges.
Mm.
And on the Doomsaw Diaries on My Joy Online, the struggle of tailors and seamstresses to make ends meet.
Look,
and
this, mm-hmm.
Alassane Suhini is advising Dr. Baumia, treat Ghana's challenges seriously, not like topics in SHS debate.
Mm-hmm. The Doomsaw is still around, though, Nathan.
Oh, it is.
Doomsaw is still around and it is biting real hard.
It is.
If you go to Class FM, petroleum prices expected to stabilize in May amidst global market fluctuations. 22% of LPG price is all taxes. Yes, we read this yesterday. Government ready for Chinese investment in optimizing green minerals development. Lands Ministry is speaking. And CD keeps falling, depreciates by 13.35% so far. If you scroll down a little bit, margins boss elected MOBA, Ibusia Penny, that's also been around for a while. EC withdraws to officials allegedly bribed during Ejisu poll. So a lot of bribe issues. I mean, two major bribe issues. The Electoral Commission has withdrawn the two officials who were allegedly bribed during the Ejisu poll. But the man who is alleged to have done the bribing says he wouldn't have done that in public. I mean, he says, why would I bribe in public? But the whole thing was seen live on TV. But that's Class FM. There is Star.
Okay, if you go to Star FM, Star FM also has some stories from Ejisu. Mm. Stephen Ntim, the MPP's chairman, says, we'll reconcile Idiomi with the NPP. Other stories. Ministers designate must stop posing as Ekufado's reps.
Okay.
That's coming in from the minority. And you have other stories as well. POS, Kumasi Central Prisons, open paralegal office for undeserved criminal convicts.
All okay.
right. I think we can get into the stories now. Maybe
there's a graphic and a few more, so let me just take you through graphic. But really, Ejisu is dominating the headlines. So yeah, if you go across the portals, Ejisu is here. Purported bribe was for lunch. EC on viral Ejisu by-election. So that's the other angle. And yeah. Essentially, Dr. Baumia begins elections. Yeah, these are all court throws out application to compel. These are all some older stories we've seen. So, yes, Nathan, let's go into the details.
Okay, I think we can start from Ejisu.
Yes,
some people know the story, others
do not.
So, yeah. The update or the resolution, as it turned out, Kwabena Boateng, he represented the MPP. He won the Ejisu by-election. It happened yesterday, and he secured 27,782 votes, representing 55.8% of the total votes cast, while Mr. Kwabena Owusu-Edeomi, an independent candidate, garnered 21,534 votes, representing 43.3% of the total votes cast. There were other candidates in the mix as well, Estelle Say of the CPP and Beatrice Boache of the Liberal Party. There were two other independent candidates, Joseph Ajiman and Atakra Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, they were in the poll as well. And Joseph Ajiman, he recorded 222 votes, and Atakra Joseph, he recorded 23 votes. The by-election had to take place because the MP and Deputy Finance Minister John Kuma passed on Friday, the 7th of March. And so mm-hmm. there was the need to find a replacement.
Yeah.
And so that happened. And it was a fiercely contested race, according to citynewsroom.com, between Kwabena Edeomi, the former three-time MPP Member of Parliament for the constituency who contested as an independent candidate, and Kwabena Boateng of the NPP. And there were allegations of vote buying, and then that led to, of course, before the election that happened, but the suspicion was heightened by the EC's statement that an official or some officials had been removed. Caleb, maybe you can give us that.
Yeah, in fact, the angle I want to bring here is purported bribe was for lunch. EC on viral Ejusu Bai election video. And the details of the story, the Electoral Commission of Ghana has released a statement regarding an alleged incident of bribery that was captured in a widely circulated video during the Ejusu Bai election held on Tuesday, April the 30th. According to the statement, the incident took place at the Fumesia Pentecost Church, the Church of Pentecost, Fumesia polling station, with the polling station code F311503. The officers at this polling station, identified as Regina Sewa, ballot issuer, and George Sesu, presiding officer, were temporary election officers recruited by the Electoral Commission for the Ejusu Bai election. The investigations revealed that a man approached their table during the election process and, after inquiring whether they had eaten, placed an envelope on the table and instructed them to use its contents for their lunch. Subsequently, the man walked away from the scene. So right now, strangers and anyone else can go and be offering EC officials money for lunch.
Well,
the EC's budget does not include lunch and breakfast for its officers on election day. Is this how we are preparing for December 7? Is this a proper justification? You know, I think that by now the NPP should be condemning the act of its member of parliament who went there into the yard of the election area to go and drop an envelope.
Questions.
I mean, the content of the envelope captured on video, live video. Now you are telling us that you wouldn't have. What did he say? There was this portal, My Joy Online. He says that why would I bribe election officials in public?
Let me give you that story.
The bribing there is not an issue, but it's the public part that he's worried about.
Well, the member of parliament for Kwadaso, okay, in the Ashanti region, Professor Kingsley Nyakun, has denied allegations that money he offered electoral officers during the Ejusu Bai election was meant to bribe them. The incident, which was captured on camera, has, since Tuesday afternoon when it emerged, been the talk of town, with the EC immediately withdrawing the officers involved and handing the matter over to the police for criminal investigation. In the video, Professor Nyaku is seen engaging in conversations with the electoral officers, and at one stage he moved to another table, fished out a white envelope and offered it to the officers, who were apparently reluctant to take it. This is My Joy Online's account, though. Professor Nyaku subsequently dropped the envelope on the table and left. And he said what he offered them could not be a bribe, as he would not have dared to bribe election officials in an open space.
So what was it? Was it a letter?
If I were to influence them, do you think I'll do it in the public space?
Please.
What I want to put on record is that I did not bribe anybody. I have not influenced anybody to vote or do anything untoward for my candidate. End quote. He further argued that the individuals were free to interpret the event as they pleased, but his conscience was clear because he could not influence EC officials who were, quote, trained, honest, and disciplined to engage in any untoward actions in a public space.
I mean, Prof taught me in school. He taught me psychology. But this one, it's not proper. The OSP must look into it. The party must issue a statement. Something must be done. Because this particular by-election was riddled with a lot of allegations of vote buying. We heard people say they have taken their share, but they are not going to vote for those who gave them the money. Mm-hmm. They are going to give it to someone else. And this keeps going on and on. And we keep saying that if people who vie for positions feel that they have bought our votes, then they have bought our conscience. They do not feel responsible for us any longer. They are not going to listen to our voices. They are immune because they feel it's a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
They have bought your votes and that's the end of the deal. Whatever else they do to recoup their money, that's the end of it. That's why it's important we keep harping that this vote buying thing should end. And if the account that he was forcing the envelope on the electoral officials is true, and the EC has thus withdrawn the two officers, then something punitive must happen to the man who went to offer the money.
That's true.
At 7, we'll bring you the business news shortly, but that was the online review, big on the Justo by-election and its outcome. Nathan Kwal is here. Bernard Abner will join us later this
morning. This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
Unleashing the power of relevant radio. This is City 97.3.
It's a holiday. Nila Telate is here with the business news brought to you by Access Bank, Girl PLC, and MT. And Nila Telate is here. Happy holiday, Nila Telate.
Happy holiday to you, Caleb.
What's in the news on the holiday?
Well, coming up, banks to maintain key soundness indicators to consolidate significant gains posted in their first quarter financials for 2024. Also, the folding up of online foreign companies in Ghana prompts calls for the support and resilience of local businesses in the face of fierce competition. It's 1st of May. Welcome to a new month. I am Nila Telate with the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN, Goyle and Access Bank. Details now. As banks publish their first quarter financial results for 2024, businesses and individuals eagerly anticipate these reports for critical insight to guide their financial decisions. Banking consultant Dr. Richmond Etuahene emphasizes the significance of maintaining key soundness indicators to fortify confidence in the financial landscape, while acknowledging the overall resilience of the banking sector as commendable. Dr. Etuahene underscores the need for intensified effort to tackle non-performing loans within individual banks.
If you look at what I've seen from the publications of the banks, 2024 publication is better than 2023. The reason being is that in 2023, the GDP made impact on the banks a lot. It hits them very high. And I think having gone over the GDP issues, they seem to be making good profits. But we can't talk about general, like the profitability is okay. The non-performing ratio currently on the industry is very, very high. Very, very high. But if you break it down, some banks will have about 7, 10, 8, some will have 12, some will have 14. So if that bank non-performing stay below 10%, then we can say that that bank is profitability is resilient, because in resilient measuring, you measure the profitability at the same time you measure the non-performing.
That was banking consultant Dr. Richmond Etuahene. Tech analyst Maximus Ametogo has urged stakeholders to prioritize the growth and support of local businesses amidst foreign competition. His comments follow food delivery company Glovo's decision to cease its operation in Ghana. Speaking to City Business News, Maximus stressed why Ghanaian businesses must understand and adapt to the unique dynamics of the local market, which many foreign entities struggle to navigate.
We have the Tonatons, we have Haptel, we have a whole lot of other shopping platforms, Zuba Shop, I remember Zuba Shop and all that. Google Trader also came and they also folded up. So for the e-commerce space in Ghana, in fact globally, it's a very competitive area. It's a very competitive, you know, space. So when you come into a market and either there are competitions or market factors do not favor you, you may end up folding up. In the long run, for me, we should encourage the local companies to grow because they'll be here. Glovo is a foreign interest in Ghana, but we need to patronize our local interest so we can also grow and expand to other African countries.
Tech analyst Maximus Ametogo speaking there. The Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, is committed to ensuring investor confidence following the financial sector cleanup. The SEC says that it will uphold regulatory oversight, ensuring compliance with financial industry requirements by all stakeholders. Deputy Director General at the Commission in Charge of Legal, Deborah Mawuse Ajemfra, says investor protection remains critical, urging investors to exercise due diligence in investment decisions.
When shareholders come for meetings, I'm sure the team at SEC agreed with that. Some of them don't read anything and they appear at the meeting. How do you vote? How do you engage in informed discussions? So I'll encourage the shareholders to read this. So as much as the professional management will be making sure the right thing is done, we at the SEC will be doing the supervision, will be making sure the right thing is done. The investor whose money has been put in there should also make sure that the right thing is done. We also know that the market has been volatile in the last few years, but we also recognize that there are long-term benefits for those who invest in mutual funds. And we encourage investors to choose the right mutual fund that is relevant for their own risk profile.
Deborah Mawuse Ajemfra is Deputy Director General at the Securities and Exchange Commission in charge of legal. The University of Ghana Cooperative Credit Union Limited declared a net surplus of more than 16 million Ghana cedis for the 2022-2023 financial year. This marks a remarkable 16.78% increase from the previous year's net surplus of 13.8 million Ghana cedis, surpassing the industry benchmark of 6% of average assets, despite facing economic challenges such as the depreciation of the cedi and the implementation of the domestic debt exchange program. The credit union has managed to post the surplus for its members. Chairman of the union, Michael Asante Enchi, attributed the success to the volumes of loans and operational efficiency.
On the financial performance of the union, by God's grace, the total assets of the union by the end of 31st December 2023 stood at 254.41 million, a growth of 25% as at the end of 2022. And this growth has come mainly through our loan portfolio. We all know how the investment market has been over the past year. And so the focus has been on granting more loans to our members. The shares of the union have also grown from 42.34 million to 48.98 million by close of December last year, also a growth of 16%. The net surplus for the year under review is 16.04 million, exceeding the previous year's performance by 13%. Members were also paid a cumulative interest of 11% on our savings, and this totaled 15.13 million.
Michael Asante Enchi is chairman of the University of Ghana Cooperative Credit Union Limited. Now, creating an enabling investor environment in Ghana to attract foreign investors into the country remains a top priority for the Ghana Investment Promotion Center, GIPC. CEO of the center, Yofi Grant, underscores the significant role investors play in contributing to the economic development of the country and says the government is open to harnessing these opportunities for mutual benefit.
In the changing landscape of global economies today, we all know that the world is not what it used to be what it was 10 years ago. So now there's a lot of room for new partners, new opportunities, and new challenges that you need to walk through, negotiate, and come to mutual consensus on how you can benefit from it. For us in Ghana, we want to do all these things to benefit us. So our engagement with all the foreign missions is to understand how they can play a role in Ghana's economic growth. That's our interest. We need to create an ambient environment to rake in foreign direct investment. It's extremely competitive now in the world for foreign direct investment. In fact, some of the countries that we would go to for foreign direct investment are also out there looking for foreign direct investment.
Yofi Grant is CEO of GIPC. On her part, Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration Minister Shelley Ayokobuche touched on some key initiatives undertaken by the government to make Ghana investment friendly.
Ghana has put in place measures to ease burdens with regards to doing business in Ghana through the provision of an enabling environment for the successful operation of investors through the digitalization of the Ghanaian economy. Through initiatives such as e-business registration system, a paperless port clearance system, a digital addressing system, a mobile money interoperability system, and a national identity card system, among others.
Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration Minister Shelley Ayokobotwe speaking at the 2024 Economic Dialogue Series. Tax consultant Jeffrey Okanse has urged taxpayers, including the business community, to demand the release of the full audit report by KPMG on the revenue mobilization contract between the Ghana Revenue Authority and the Strategic Mobilization Limited. This follows calls by some civil society organizations asking the government to publicize the report to ascertain the extent of revenue SML accrued for the government. Speaking to City Business News, the tax consultant noted that government ought to have taken proactive steps to release the report for public scrutiny.
The information that they came up with after auditing, that information should have been a public document. We should all know, because in the first place, we told you, let the Auditor General do that report so that we can have access to it at the public accounts level, where the Auditor General's report would give us information on that. So if you do not want the Auditor General to do that and give us the information to the Auditor General report, and you have gone ahead and done this, then you should make sure you grant us some reports through your own arrangement of the reports from the KPMG. So it's a sacrosanct. I mean, they shouldn't have even waited. Government should not have even waited for us in the business community, the DSOs, the various stakeholders. They shouldn't have waited for us to even demand. It was only proper for them to bring the report out after engaging KPMG.
Tax consultant Jeffrey Okanse there, and how is the local currency performing? And on the interbank foreign exchange market, where banks trade amongst themselves, the dollar gained 3 pesos, selling at 13 cedis 28 pesos. The British pound is selling at 16 cedis 63 pesos, gained 1 peso. And the euro is selling at 14 cedis 19 pesos after losing some 9 pesos. However, as some forex bureaus in the capital, the dollar is selling at 13 cedis 70 pesos, while the British pound could be sold to you at 16 cedis 70 pesos, and the euro going for 14 cedis 60 pesos. And that's it for the breakfast edition of City Business News, proudly brought to you by MTN, Goyal and Access Bank. My name is Ni Lati Lati. Happy Workers Day to you, and do enjoy the rest of the holiday. Good morning.
This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation. The City Breakfast Show. Rise above the noise.
After 7. On the first day in the fifth month in the year 2024, business news just gone by, brought to you by Ni Lati Lati and sponsored by Access Bank. To the businessman, trader and parent sending money to loved ones and business partners, thanks to Access Bank and PAPS partnership, you can now send money across border hassle-free. Now you can send money to pay for goods and services, make business transactions, and cover school fees across Africa without worrying about foreign exchange losses or delays. It's straightforward, secure, and keeps your mind at ease. Benefit from instant payments across Nigeria, Liberia, Gambia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone with zero foreign exchange hassle. When you send money in cedis, it will now be received in any other currency by the recipient. For more information, visit our website www.ghana.accessbankplc.com or call our toll-free number 0800004400. For all your cross-border payments, visit any of our branches and PAPS it with Access Bank. It's more than banking. The business news was also brought to you by Gold PLC, your CIMG Hall of Fame and 2022 Petroleum Company of the Year. And we've taken the lead again, providing you with ultra-molding liquefied petroleum auto gas service stations. Look out for us at Bema Camp Gold Service Station, Accra. Kweshi also in Accra, Pedri Junction in Cape Coast, and Pinton in Takrady and Kenton Chrono in Kumasi. Gold delivering the safest and affordable gas at your convenience. Gold Good Energy, Yangarayetia. Now, with MTN Pick and Pay Later, you can now buy a sleek and trendy smartphone and enjoy the luxury of paying in convenient, easy daily, weekly, or monthly installment plans. All you have to do is to walk into any of our selected MTN service centers to choose your favorite from a wide range of mobile phones on offer. The best part is all phones come with up to 2 gigabyte free MTN data for the first 6 months, so you can share your photos and get all the biggest scoops online. Go on and share the exciting news with your family and friends. Let them know that you can pick now and pay later on MTN. So, what are you doing today? And it's time for sports. Brought to you by Zonda and Shell. Zonda says, in a world where dreams are driving force, one company stands out as the hope of transformation. Zonda Ghana Limited, your one-stop shop for quality trucks like Shantui bulldozers, excavators, graders, payloaders, rollers, TX trucks and oil tanks, all made and assembled right here in Ghana. At Zonda Ghana Limited, we do not only create opportunities and empower people, but we also provide top-notch after-sales service for all your heavy and light-duty trucks and machinery needs. Visit us today off the Tema Aplao Road, close to the Free Zone Sound Clay, Tema, or call us on 0501-772222 or 0501-773333. Zonda, built in Ghana, built in Ghana. And there's a simple truth about love. It drives us to give off our very best. In the same way Shell fuels drive your car to peak performance. That's why every car loves Shell. With over 100 years of innovation, you won't just be buying any fuel, but the most advanced fuels which save you money in the long run. So drive into any Shell station today and fuel up your car with Shell fuels designed for energy efficiency and performance, and give your car the love it needs for better journeys. Go well.
This is the City Breakfast Show. The city's biggest conversation.
Vinicius Jr. though. Oh, nicely done. Now, is that a penalty? It is. Rodrigo on the turn inside the Bayern penalty area. And Real Madrid have a penalty kick. Here he comes. 2-2. Vinicius Jr. for Real Madrid.
All right, and so all to play for in the second leg at the Santiago Bernabeu. A week later, Madrid forward Vinicius Jr. Scoring a double, including an 83rd-minute equalizing penalty to snatch a 2-2 draw against Bayern Munich at the Allianz Arena last night. There's more from the UEFA Champions League for you. Plus, in tennis, we had a major upset in the Madrid Open.
And Madrid will say goodbye to a legend. 7-5-6-4.
All right, so Rafa Nadal crashes out of the Madrid Open after losing to Czech Republic's Jiří Leščenko. All of that plus some local news coming up with me, Gabby Offer. Kickoff is proudly brought to you by Shell, Lachelle, and Zonda GH. Okay, so let's start off with the UEFA Champions League, where Vinicius Junior scored a late penalty to end Madrid a 2-0 draw in their first leg of the Champions League semi-final. At Bayern Munich, the Bavarians got their goals to Leroy Sané and Harry Kane. And so what it means for Harry Kane is that he's now been directly involved in 11 goals in the Champions League this season, 8 goals and 3 assists, the most ever by an English player in a single campaign in the competition. Here is Harry Kane after last night's performance.
Harry, so close to the win after a brilliant fight back. What's the overriding feeling amongst you and your teammates to come away with a draw?
I think a little disappointing. I think once we got 2-1 ahead, we had two or three good chances, especially from set plays. And but this is Champions League semi-final. You know, we expected a tough game. Real Madrid, one of the best teams in Europe for sure. And they can punish you with one or two actions like they did today. So, of course, we're disappointed we didn't come away with a win. But overall, it's all to play for next week. And we know if we play like we did in large spells today, we can have chances next week. We've just got to be able to take them.
After you made such a good start to the game, how difficult was it to get the momentum back?
Yeah, we started first 10, 15 minutes. We was really on the front foot. We had a couple chances there. And then their goal come against the run of play, really. And then they built up the momentum and we struggled to play our game. But second half, we come out with a higher intensity. And we deserved to get the two goals. And then it was just a shame we couldn't get that third one. But, all to play for. Like I say, we dust ourselves down. Tough match, but we look forward to next week.
All right, so that's the man there, Harry Kane. He's a striker for Bayern Munich, speaking after last night's performance, 2-0 draw against Madrid. For Madrid, they've now drawn four consecutive games for the first time in the UEFA Champions League, but remain unbeaten in 11 games in the competition this time. They've won seven and drawn four. We hear from Antonio Rudiger after the 2-0 draw at the Allianz Arena.
Antonio, two top teams level after that late penalty gave you a lifeline. How crucial could that goal turn out to be in this tie?
Yeah, it was important that if you cannot win, then don't lose. This is what we did. But I think still, I think we dropped too much, you know. I think a bit silly things, easy goals. But yeah, we are back in the tie. And I said it before the game, it's a 50-50 tie.
What forced those silly mistakes that you speak of?
Oh, at the end of the day, I think we can make more pressure in the first goal, and in the second one is Jamal is a good player, Muziala is a good player. He loves that situations. So I think you cannot blame anyone. Good results still.
All right, so that's Antonio Rudiger. He says the result, the 2-0 draw against Bayern Munich, is a good one for them. And so Madrid will host Bayern Munich at the Bernabeu for the second leg of the UEFA Champions League semi-final on Wednesday, May 8th. Later tonight, there's one other semi-final to look forward to. At the Signal Iduna Park, it's Borussia Dortmund taking on Paris Saint-Germain at 7 p.m. Away from the UEFA Champions League, now Ipswich moved within a single point of securing automatic promotion to the Premier League after a 2-1 win at Coventry last night. The Tractor Boys are now 3 points clear of third place Leeds, meaning a draw at home to Huddersfield on Saturday, who are all but relegated already, will be enough to take them back to the top flight for the first time since 2001-2002 season. On the Ghanaian side of things, Abdul Fattah Issahaku has been named Leicester City's Young Player of the Season at the club's end-of-season awards. Issahaku scooped the award ahead of contenders like Zambia's Patson Daka to crown a very impressive debut season with the Foxes in the Sky Bet English Championship. The 20-year-old, who is on loan from Portuguese side Sporting Lisbon, has scored 6 goals and added 13 assists in 39 games. Well, Fattah Issahaku's impressive performance has grabbed the attention of Ghana's all-time leading goalscorer, Samoa Jan. And for Jan, he's confident that Fattah possesses the necessary skills to excel at the highest level.
When I see a good player, I always see it. Fattah Issahaku, I think, even when he was playing in the local league, there was one question one journalist asked me, who is the player I've seen in the local league so far? I remember I mentioned his name, that he's somebody who can be very, very good. Although he didn't start so well for the senior national team, but he's picking up. He's a young boy, and he's picking up. Look at what he's doing in Leicester. And for me, although we needed him in the national team, but for him not to come to the AFCON, I think it's the best decision he made, because he had to focus on his playing career to focus to make sure he gets to that height, you know. So I think Ghanaian had patience for him, although there was a bit of criticism. But I think it's a speed of it. Look at what he's doing now. Now Leicester has qualified. After, he's coming to play for Ghana. I think the decision he made, I think he's got the right people behind him who are advising him more. And he's a good player, and everything will depend on him to have a beautiful career or to get to that height. Everything will depend on him. There might be advices and everything, but he's the one on the field. So,
All right, so there's a former Black Stars keeper, Samoa John, speaking about Fatawu Issack, who's exploited for Leicester City in the Championship. They'll be playing the Premier League next season, so all the best to the Ghanaian and the Foxes. Now, to the MTN FA Cup, later today, Dreams FC will take on Soccer Intellectuals in the quarterfinals of the MTN FA Cup at the Theatre of Dreams at 3 p.m. today. Dreams will be hoping to reach the semis for a second straight season under head coach Abdul Karim Zito. We head to the corridors of CAF, and their president is Dr. Patrice Motsepe, and he's advocated for footballers to make as much money as possible during their playing careers. He said this in the presence of FIFA President Gianni Infantino while speaking extensively on players spending their fortune well and making the right investment.
I've always encouraged players, because football is a short career. Whilst you play, you have to make as much money as possible. And I encourage them to take some of that money and invest it for the future when they don't play football. And when I was president of Mamelodi Sundowns, I go to where the players train. I see Mercedes-Benz. I see BMW. Very expensive. In fact, even Ferrari. And of course, it's fine for them to buy these wonderful things, as long as they take some of the money and invest it for the days when they don't play football. Because I've seen many players who were our heroes when they played football, and they've got nothing when the football days are over.
All right, so that's CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe speaking there. Let's wrap up with some tennis. And Rafael Nadal's Madrid Open run ended with an emotional straight set defeat to Czech youngster Jiří Leceka under the roof of Kaja Majica in front of a passionate home crowd, hoping to see the five-time champion conjure a fairy tale run deep into the second week in what is expected to be his last appearance at the event. The 30-seed Leceka spoiled the party with a 7-5, 6-4 victory in just over 2 hours. So Nadal is out. He'll be looking to compete in the French Open, kicking off in a bit. And that's it for today. For more sports stories, you can head to citysportsonline.com and on X to citysportsgt. Back later at 5 p.m. with Sport Flash. My name is Gabby Offer. Kickoff is proudly brought to you by Shell, Lachelle, and Zonda GH. Enjoy the rest of your day. Do take care of yourself, and bye-bye.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
7:39, rainy morning. Where are you listening to us from? What is your situation? Are you safe? Is the road clear? I hope your neighborhood is not flooded. Are you on your way to the family consecration service? What are you doing? I'd love to know. Yesterday, the by-election at Ejusu came off. We have a winner. There are some fallouts. We'll bring you a quick highlight from there. And then we want to discuss how the rains are impacting our lives, our environment, and how we're living. Later this morning, we'll bring you a closely related issue.
And the world all right with me.
Dr. Rose E. M. Enchia Mensah, she delivered a public lecture at the Ghana Academy of Arts and Sciences. It was an annual lecture. This dates back to 2019. She talked about a very important topic that is very relevant and is one of our top issues here on 97.3 and the City Breakfast Show. She asked the question, is Ghana on the brink of ecological suicide? Is Ghana on the brink of ecological suicide? Lots of food for thought and actionable points that we need to be implementing as soon as yesterday. We'll bring back that lecture because, you know, we'd like to let thoughts, thinking, data, information, thought-provoking questions occupy our minds so that can inform our actions. So as a listener, we're feeding you with quality thoughts so that we can all think about our country together and see where the loopholes are and how we can get things done and get them done better. Today is the birthday of some amazing people. I'll be celebrating them as it's a lovely day, lovely rainy morning. In the meantime, after a sound sleep, oh, what a day. It's a good day for more sleep, right? Now, after a sound sleep, as the day breaks into a busy morning, you need something to get you going. And we're introducing the new morning break biscuit from Nutri-Snack, the morning biscuit that is a great combination of wholeness and taste. Indulge in our unique blend of oats, fiber, grains with a crispy bite and, oh, so tasty flavor, carefully crafted to invigorate your mornings. It's unbelievably affordable at One Ghana City. Have a great start to your mornings with a new morning break biscuit from Nutri-Snack. This advert is FDA approved. Oh, before I get to the next information for you, Nathan, it would have been really good if this holiday were pushed to Friday, you know, and the rain also, you know, it's Friday morning, no, then everything was set.
No, it's not something we do in Ghana, you know, we like to observe the holidays.
Push the holiday to Friday.
Well, I don't know. Look, Saturday, Sunday, that's a conversation maybe we need to have as a country. I don't know. Maybe our lawmakers, maybe somebody can start that conversation and say that if holidays are, let's say, midweek or say on a Thursday, if we can commemorate the day but move the holiday to a Friday for an extended weekend whatever, we'll have to find out. I don't know what it would mean for productivity, because there are those who argue, and I remember this came up a few years ago, it was on the front page of
there are too many holidays.
We had too many holidays and all of that. So I think as a country, we need to have a conversation about how we, you know, lump some of these holidays, because it's done in other places where people can have the holidays are banked. People can have bank holidays, so extended weekend,
holidays,
that kind of thing. So I don't know. Look, it's a conversation I feel we need to have as a country, because if you have a holiday, say on a Wednesday, it kind of disrupts the flow of the week. So Wednesday you are not working. Thursday you have to come back to work. Friday is almost like a holiday kind of thing.
And then Saturday.
Then so I feel we need to have a conversation about that. How to properly, you know, pack those days together. So, you know, you work Monday to Thursday. Friday is a holiday. Maybe Friday commemorates a holiday that was on Wednesday or Thursday. So Friday you are off, obviously Saturday, Sunday and all of that.
But the way the economy is going, you know, are people even observing the holiday? Because this morning, by the time I got to the mirror, I got to the junction, the traffic I saw coming from Kaswa towards Seko.
No, for some people,
you're not going, man.
No. For some people, the holiday, I mean, if you don't go out and hustle hard,
sleep and see.
No, get something chopped. So, yeah, that's how it is. But, you know, I think it just speaks to just our country's economy, right? Last night, I was home, right? I was home, and you know, my wife was having a conversation with a friend of hers. They were talking about COVID and the lockdown, and it just took my mind back to when the lockdown happened, and the fact that we're under lockdown for what, 2 weeks? Was it 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks? But you could tell how biting it was for a lot of people, right? For those who probably, for a lot of people in the informal sector, who needed to work on a daily to earn something small. Having to stay home for 3 weeks was hell for them.
Very disruptive.
Very disruptive. The government tried to give them food and all of that. And it just took my mind back. And as today marks Workers' Day, I was just thinking about how we all live, how we survive, whether you work formally like us, where at the end of every month you earn a salary, or for the informal workers. It made me think a lot about what we can do to restructure this country's economy so that there's a proper safety net for those at the bottom. We can pay formal workers and pay them very, very, very well. Because at the end of the day, like we read a few weeks ago concerning the cost of living, the cost of living has gone through the roof in the last year or two. But a lot of things have remained static. So, for example, not a lot of salaries have gone up. Right? Like I said, costs have gone up. All the costs you can think of, petrol,
fuel,
if you like, transportation, food, clothes, fees, everything. But you find that salaries aren't really matching up to that. So I feel we need to really talk about the worker, the worker's well-being, how we can ensure that, you know, people get just rewards for what they do. Because trust me, there are lots of people who are working hard, very eager to work if they are not working. For those who are working, they are very strong, they apply themselves, they do all they can, but the return is very little because the general economic conditions are so bad. Now everything, so it's a chain. So the businesses that even pay people are struggling.
They're struggling.
So how can they make more money to pay the workers? Meanwhile, on this other side, costs have gone up, not only for the individual worker, but for businesses themselves.
Because, Nathan, I'm wondering who is calculating the cost that businesses are now incurring providing alternative sources of power.
Yes.
You know, because you are not making extra income simply because then the lights are going off and your clients, your customers are not giving you extra money simply or even paying on time simply because now you have to buy fuel and put in your generators. Right. Recently, one of our colleagues was telling me that he went to a fuel service station and a gentleman was holding, you see the Kufuor gallon?
Yes.
The blue one. See, that one is wider and thicker than the yellow slender one. The guy was holding like 8 of those and he was going to buy fuel. And he said, hey, they're going to put it in their plant. And that is the second time he had been to the fuel service station, because the first time he went, he bought 10 of such. And now he's buying 8 of such for one day, and because they run a restaurant. Okay. And how much can you make from a plate? And how many people must come to your restaurant to buy how many plates? How many plates can you sell in a day in order to make up for the extra cost you are incurring as a business, as someone who is running a business, to make enough to then pay your salary, to pay salaries as well, and to make enough for GRA not to harass your business, in Dr. Baumier's, borrowing Dr. Baumier's words, harass your business not to collapse it. How much can you make from a plate to pay for the utilities, the air conditioners, the lights, and the other accoutrements, the music that you are playing, everything that you are providing to keep your business afloat? So, I mean, people are really, really struggling, and the challenge is very real. For those who are running businesses, it's tough, and for those who are in regular employment, it's not any easier. And I don't know how we can go back to that time where there was a lot of emphasis on remote work, so that you do not have to necessarily go to work maybe 5 times in a week, right? As we're saying, people are really stressed, people are really tired, because imagine all that traffic, people from community 22, Kaswa, community 25 have to endure every day of the week to get to work. Have we missed out on that lesson COVID taught us, where we could then, you know, you have 5 days a week. Maybe you show up at work 3 times a week, or maybe 2 times a week, and do the rest of the work you can do from home if you can. So you're taking internet from people at home. Does it reduce the burden?
But you see, also, then
you're home and the light is off.
Very good. So everything will have to be connected to ensure that we embrace work and usher it into this new age. I mean, in places where all these other pillars exist, you can then construct the rest of the infrastructure on top of it. So if you live in an environment where one there's a constant supply of electricity, because the electricity powers the internet service. Yeah. So there's electricity, there's internet. I bet you, if those two things existed and existed very well, lots of companies would not mind having people work from home. Of course, if your work allows you to do that kind of thing, because not every occupation allows working from home. Yeah. So you have to do an as and when and assess and see, okay, this works for you, doesn't. But the bottom line is this. I think that we need to look at providing those pillars so that the world of work, one, embraces the new age, as we call it, the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
But also, in embracing that, we can do lots of things to ensure that the workers' well-being is also checked.
Yeah.
Right? Because you mentioned it. Look, if you live at Community 25, and you have to endure this traffic.
And I'm thinking after this rain, sir, before you get to the main road.
Every day, in, out, in, out. Look at the productive hours you spend in traffic. By the time you get to the office, you are wasted.
Yeah.
How much work can you put in? Right? You really want to, but physically and mentally, you are out of it. You are drained. So we need to think about laying those pillars down, building the rest of the infrastructure in place so that the modern day worker, the 21st century Ghanaian worker, can work in those circumstances where physically he can deliver, mentally he's sharp, financially he's okay. When these three things come together, I think we'll start to see a lot more progress than
because I think we are really milking a cow that is very lean, and we don't care about the welfare of the cow. We're just hitting it like keep plowing.
But the point is that,
and that kind of thing.
We must be productive, right? So we need, absolutely, it's an aggregation of everybody's effort. So the workers' effort, the employers' effort, and then the other things that will have to be provided for, right, by the state. The challenge is that some of the things are missing, right? We are talking about, again, I go back to the conversation we had, Committee 22 and 25. Some of the messages, I was thinking about it and I was asking myself, if I had to endure this for 1 month, would you even be productive? But people are going at it every day. 5 days a week, maybe 6 days a week.
Yeah.
They are trying. But you realize that all the other things are absent. So in the end, what more can they provide?
Bernard, I started this conversation by asking if we should be pushing holidays to Friday so people can have some more rest. But then again, I also realized that even on a holiday, people are still going out to eck out a living, because like a holiday is an opening for you to then explore other alternatives, because what you're doing on a regular 9-to-5 is not taking you home at all.
It's a big discussion. You know, in societies where people are paid better, they have a more clinical approach to rest.
Mm-hmm.
So you have relatives who live in the Western world who will tell you they're on holiday and they'll either travel with the family or even leave the country. People who live in Canada, because the weather is so cold, they would at the best and next opportunity fly to the Caribbean or something. So at some level, rest is a function of economic status.
Yeah.
So the poorer you are, the less paid you are, the more, ironically, the more you work.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. So, for example, today, most people who do office jobs will be home.
Yeah.
Most people who work in markets will go and work. Most people who trade will go and sell.
Yeah.
Most people who farm will probably still go to the farm. Most people who hawk will still hawk.
Yeah.
So let's not forget that the issue of even rest and work-life balance is still income determined.
Yeah.
So in terms of geopolitically, countries with better advanced economies will have a more structured rest.
Yeah.
Partly because they also work and are paid by the hour.
Yeah.
So they are more productive than people who have an unstructured work.
Yeah.
So that's point number one. Point number two, you and Nathan correctly said, there's also the difference between different kinds of work. So you know, Ghana, we divide work into three.
Mm-hmm.
Agric, services, and industry.
Yeah.
So a lot of what you are saying applies more to services, which also happens to be growing.
Mm.
Now, if you work in industry, so you work in a factory, you work in a plant, they work with shift system.
Yeah.
So they working from home is not really the issue. If you are a factory hand or you work as the operations manager or the quality control manager, you have to be there to work.
Yeah.
So that you're in Tema or Takoradi, you work in the mine. Your work-life balance has more to do with the schedule. All right. Now, this industrial sector, manufacturing, is shrinking. The largest growing sector in Ghana is services. So I do get you when you say most people who work in Accra, apart from traders, are working in services. So whether they are working in an IT firm, they are working in a bank, they are teachers, they are working in a hospital, they work in a radio station, they work as consultants, they work as lawyers, they are all providing services. So I agree with you. When it comes to services, there can be a better work-life balance than even for manufacturing and agri, because you don't have to be there to work, okay? But the key to services work-life balance are two things. The mindset of the work and then the infrastructure to support remote work, all right? So infrastructure to support remote work, we are talking electricity. We are talking internet. We're talking devices. Now, this electricity and internet must be available, it must be accessible, and it must be affordable to make remote work possible. Now, if you have a timetable-less doomso, you cannot work from home. You remember the gentleman who called? He says he lives in, he works at East Legon, but he lives around your area. Your old area.
Race course?
Those areas.
Yes. Yeah.
And he has to sit in a car for like an hour and a half to get to work. So he's at home and the light is off at home. So he sits in an Uber or a Trotsky to get to East Legon, only find the light is off. Now, if this guy knew for sure that there would be light at East Legon, he would leave home. Now, if he wants to work from home, he needs a turbonet or reliable internet that he can pay for. He also needs a device that he can use. Now, he needs his ecosystem to also have it. It's not just him. So maybe he's working as a graphic designer. The person who's sending him the job should have internet to be able to send the work. He should be able to finish the work and send it to the guy
so
to check.
So the person receives it.
You get the point.
Confirms
so
it.
It's not just about him. He's a service provider. Now, if the people you are providing service for, so maybe you are doing graphic design for a chop bar owner. If the chop bar owner doesn't have internet, you still have to print the thing and send it to him. Do you get my point? So the service sector cannot promote remote work, which is one dimension of work-life balance, if the whole ecosystem and the infrastructure to support it doesn't exist. Now, the cost of data in Ghana is very high. The cost of electricity is very, very high. Some of our communities, internet is even bad. So you can have an area with a turbonet that doesn't even work. And even if it works, you can't have a proper Google Zoom meeting. Do you get where I'm going? So a productivity revolution needs an infrastructure revolution, right? So if that infrastructure is not available, affordable, and accessible, you can't have a productivity revolution.
It must be available, affordable, and accessible.
Available means that there's bandwidth there. Right?
Yeah.
Accessible means there's connection to the last mile.
Yeah.
So MTN, Vodafone, and all these guys, the new guys who have come, what's their name?
Telecel.
No, the other guys who have been licensed recently.
Oh, Starlink.
They must have the coverage.
Yeah.
Then there must be connection to communities. So, for example, you drive to estates. Now, if I come to your old area, where you used to live, Andana Chrome, are there enough connections for your internet to be reliable? There are some communities with no proper, so Vodafone, for example, they used to have this connection where you can then connect your router. But if the community is not safe, you won't have it.
That's true.
Now, because how profitable is the telco business for them to even come to your house?
There are parts of McCarthy Hill that you need to be using either MTN or Vodafone, or your network would not be good. And this is not even far away.
So you see where the thing is going. So the government policy must encourage and make it even cheaper. Now, internet can only be useful if it empowers people who are in low-income areas. So it's not just we, the people who are high-income earners. So you go to communities like Matahiku, outskirts of Accra, Kakasunaka, Weja. Do you get it? So it costs Telcel, MTN, Airtel, Tigo to bring that internet to you and for you to pay for it. All right. Now, then we now come to electricity and all those things. Now, when we finish all of that, then we now come to the mindset of the Ghanaian worker. All right. Most people think that when they are home, they can do their own thing. Now, people who come to work. Now, I'm an employer of people. They work in my internet department. I'm working in a bank. Half of the time, they're on Facebook. They're on TikTok. They are watching wedding videos. So if the mindset of the person working, there has to be a system in place to ensure that if you log... Now, the other thing you need to know is that there are some professions that you should not be able to log in from home. for security purposes.
Right.
So yes, if you, for example, the network that we used to work here. Yes. Let's assume you say you want to work from home as a journalist. So Calvis goes to wherever he goes to.
Yeah.
To be able to log onto the network, he needs some protocols. So there are so many things, and the whole digital literacy of our people. I mean, I'm sure your mom will come to you with her phone. She said, my WhatsApp has disappeared. Fix it for me. You heard that before, right? So people have access to technology, but they don't even understand how it works.
Yeah.
So your auntie will come and say, hey, all right, if on there, WhatsApp is large. Then you say, it's there. They say, it's not there. I can't see it.
You know, but...
So I'm trying to build a case.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that what you are asking for is true.
Yeah.
We need to train people. We need to get people to be conversant with technology. We need to get people to be also more diligent and honest, because if you say people should work from home, maybe you have I don't know. I give an example of a work. Maybe you are an IT firm or you are a marketing consultancy. Somebody can say he's working by his home doing another person's job.
No, but the thing is that
so we have to find a way to make sure that even if they are home, they actually work.
About the productivity point there, I think that if the person has deliverables, right? You have deliverables. You have to do project one, project two, project three, and you know that you can either deliver them in an hour or 3 hours or 5 hours.
Yeah.
The good thing also is that when the person is done with the work, the person submits it. It's approved. Work is done for the day, and then they can also get to focus on other thing because at the end of the day, they'll be paid based on the work they have done. Right. And I think there's one thing that makes Ghanaians very productive when they go abroad because the infrastructure you talk about exists.
The system exists.
It's affordable. It's accessible, and then it's available.
Let me add two more infrastructure points. So, for example, co-working spaces.
Yeah.
So there are lots of young people I know who do great work.
Yeah.
They can't afford an office.
Yeah.
Now I think there should be state-sponsored co-working spaces
like in every digital center
where it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
You set up your laptop. There's a fan. You can buy coffee or Milo, and you work.
Yeah.
There's reliable internet.
Yeah.
I think that co-working spaces are expensive because the internet is expensive.
Yeah.
Government can open co-working spaces in every community. Achimota should have one.
Yeah.
Adenta should have one. Medina should have one or two. All right. Where people can go and work.
Yeah.
Now, that work they are doing, maybe he's a graphic designer, maybe he's a computer programmer or something. He's doing it as a freelance, as a gig guy. He's able to go and sit there and work for 3 days in a week and then spend the rest. So maybe he's living in his area. Uh-huh. So maybe he lives at Adenta. He can walk to the co-working space at Adenta Community Library, work for 3 days and come back home. Because mind you, a lot of those houses and where they live are not even amenable to work.
Yeah.
Maybe he's in a compound house. There aren't
noise.
You get it? Maybe there's a market next to him.
Nearby,
so for him, work is even an escape. So the solution, there are two levels of the solution. One level is to get the telcos and these guys to make the home a more work-friendly space.
Yeah.
But if you also create more co-working spaces, which are easy, so people go there and then they work. So Hub Accra, Hub Kumasi, Hub Ho, and those things. Yeah. I think like those are the things that, so if I'm like a DCE, one of the things I should be saying is that, how can I get my young people in Adenta to be more engaged?
Yeah.
So let's create a co-working space for them where the internet is subsidized, where they have access to stable power, and then they can network and do their stuff. You have a community library as well. So you can go and sit in the library and read because you have an exam to write.
Yeah.
So that work-life balance you are calling for is also community-based.
Yeah.
Most of our communities, what do we have? We have unplanned settlements where in a community you can have 20... Okay, it's not 20, maybe 6 different spots, and they are all playing music.
Yeah, they at the same time,
you know, beer palace,
5 churches in a 20 so meter
churches,
radius.
Beer palace. There isn't the spatial planning is not working
Because
if the space look, when I was in the UK, I used to live with my friend at a place called Walsall. Walsall isn't a great town, Walsall is not a town that you want to go and live in, but yeah, that's where I was. There was a community library, and once you live in Walsall, you can go and use it and read.
Yeah.
There were different, everything you see in a big town is in a small town too.
So
if you're in Birmingham, you have a place where it's like Accra Mall.
Yeah.
There's Warsaw have their version.
So there's Argos somewhere.
Everybody almost has their version. Do you get my point? So you don't need to travel that much. So on a day like this, I can go and sit in the library and read. I can go to a co-working space and do my work and not pay too much. There's something called WeWork. Now, this is the thing with Ghana. Most businesses are solving basic problems. So you come to, I drive from, say, La Paz to Nathan's old house. I see 12 filling stations. I see 8
what's the name of this thing? Pharmacies. I see 15 top bars. There isn't the spatial planning. There's no method to the madness. Just but so this is how we start. A properly planned community should think about what you need. So for somebody who lives at race course, he should have maybe 3 or 4
community library, pharmacy.
Do you get it? So it's well planned.
A little bit of everything.
So the guy wakes up in the morning from Nyamiche Junction. He knows that he can just walk and sit in the library and read. He can get his food at. But it's everybody's doing everything. So there's filling stations everywhere. There's eateries everywhere. There's people selling. It's just haphazard
on the street. Shoes and bags.
So the work-life balance you call for is not just a question of national infrastructure or even the mindset of the employer. It's even the way the community is built.
Encompassing.
Do you get it? The way the community is. So I am saying that there are some communities that are old. It's difficult to salvage. But the new communities. Do you get it? So the new like the people who call us in, the people called into our show last week on the water issue.
The peri-urban areas, no?
Let's just take Accra. Look at the places they called from. Community 25. Then you move to the Bonkatamanso area, Bechile, Mataheko, to those places. Then you come to the Adenta, Oyarifa places. Then you go to Weja, Samsam. Then you go to Nsawam area. Then you go to your place, Ablekuma, all the way to La Paz. So these places, which are supposed to be new, are rather more difficult. They have poor infrastructure, bad roads. The internet connection is not even there. So if you're an estate, you have to go and beg MTN
utility
to come.
Utility is not available.
Do you get my point? So our underdevelopment is, for me, spatial and it's local governance based. Which is why I say, if you want Ghana to work, let's come up with this idea. Whoever wins the next election, make the job of DCE an applied job. All right? Let people apply. Set up like a district council of state, which is like people who are the maybe the, I don't know what you call it. People, somebody applies to be DC for, say, Gas South. What is his track record? Now, he knows that he has only 30% state-sponsored money. The 70% is IGF. And the IGF is shops, markets, property rate. He must come and do a PowerPoint and say, my name is Nathan Kwao. I've lived in this area for 15 years. I worked as a journalist for 12 years. Now I want to be MCE. I'm not really aligned to any political party. Or I could be aligned to a political party. It doesn't really matter.
I have a degree in city planning.
This is my
plan. Not necessarily.
It doesn't have to. It doesn't
not necessarily. Okay. But just somebody
this is my
who can
plan.
Think clearly.
So he
about
makes a presentation to the district.
Right.
This is my plan for rejuvenating or regenerating Gas South. These are the number of houses in the area. These are the 3 categorical houses, the compound houses, the middle. This is the average property rate we collect per year. This amount we pay the property rate collectors. These are the number of shops in the area. This is how much we are going to collect from the shop owners. These are the trotters and the markets. These are the lorry stations. He comes up with his plan.
All
right. These are the schools. These are the hospitals. This is how we hope to plan it. Then they'll ask him, how do you hope to do it? Now he talks to the chiefs. These are the lands. This is the way we are going to sell the land. We're not going to sell land to people. We are going to develop. You get my point? Then we are working together to develop it. But in Ghana, what do we do? Everybody depends on the president. He appoints 6,000 people because of some tripod, people who are giving money to delegates to vote. There's no way you're going to develop like that. Do you understand? This thing I've said that we should do, in Kenya and things, they've started doing it. So in Kenya now, the job of mayor, people leave university professorship and apply for it because we've created the space to allow that leader to function. Here, even if you appoint a DC, you've not given him the, it's not even about how good he is. The system that brings him to power and the way that you expect him to work, he can't succeed. So so this work-life balancing I'm saying, I think it starts with fixing our local governance. Okay, fixing our local governance in a way that makes, and this is the other thing, you create competition. Yesterday I was talking to some people who were talking about, now the EPA has something they called air quality test for different parts of Accra.
Yeah.
So they publish monthly the Dansoman air quality, the Madina air quality. Yeah. You get it? Yeah. So you can set targets and say the gas Ablekuma West, that's Dansoman. All right. So this Dansoman guy, there are ways the state is monitoring him. There's a sanitation index, there's an air quality index, there's a water index, there's a power index, there's an index for education and health. There's an index for commercial economic. Then we do a proper evaluation of whether this guy called Godfrey Akotobuafu, who's the MCE for Dansoman, whether he's working or not. So until we fix that and make it meritocratic, We will not, because Caleb, I always say something. You know theoretically many things because you study geography. A thing above you taught you well.
Yeah, prof.
But you don't really know it until you actually apply it and it works for you.
True.
Do you get it? So in Ghana, we know many things theoretically. We have LUSPA. But until we give competent people the chance to manage and organize our spaces, we will just be a country of theorists. All right. And the things I'm saying, they are done in other places. There's accountability.
Yeah.
That accountability means that regularly, the guys who are in charge, the duty bearers, speak to the people about what they are trying to do. And we all compare notes. That also helps to reduce corruption. We are all transparent. We involve the chiefs, involve the religious leaders, involve the political leaders. That's the ideal situation.
Yeah.
But what do we have? You have people who organize themselves into a political party. And then they say they want to appoint somebody to be MP. This person who wants to be MP has to pay these people money to vote for him.
Yeah.
With money he doesn't have. He probably goes to borrow the money. Now he gets this money and gives everybody a flat screen or whatever, maybe 25 people or 30 people. He's paid them to vote for him. Now he comes to office. He's looking for money to recoup what he's done. There's no real accountability because we don't know where the money came from. And he's not interested in you. He's not interested in LUSPA. He's interested in making enough money to pay back the people he took money from to be able to bribe these guys to vote for him.
Yeah.
How can development come on the basis of such a thing? And you replicate this at the MP level, it goes to the national level. Do you get me? So the MP becomes everybody's benefactor. By 4 a.m., they've queued in his house. They are all waiting. Pay my school fees.
Mm.
Pay money for my medical bill. By the time he finishes sorting those people out, he doesn't even have the energy to do anything of the things I've said. Do you get me? So if we don't find a way of reducing the influence of illicit money, and making our local governance a meritocratic system, building accountability structures in our local leadership, bringing different people together, the religious leaders, the chiefs, the technical people, the political parties, to work together to bring development. Caleb, it will just be a pipe dream. Because the forces that are working against our development are both internal and external.
Yeah.
Internally is corruption, this system I've just described, which is happy because they are not accountable. All right.
Mm.
Then there's external forces who want to keep us exporting things raw. Our people will always be beholden to them. We will be consumers, will not produce anything. If we don't wake up and say we want a better system and demand that our leaders create that system that will make the very best of us lead, and then all of us will support. The things I've said, is it complicated?
No.
Did I learn it from mini school? No. Just observing, interact with IDEC, CDD, talk to DCs, go and meet political parties. When you do this work for 10 years, you have a blueprint, because you can see that yesterday I was at a program at the World Bank where you had Professor Maoli Giorgio Menyo from the public health department. They did a study on the effect of climate change on health.
Right.
So okay. People from AMA, people from Ghana met you. Look, the people in that room, Ghanaians, they understand what it takes to bring development.
Yeah.
The only thing about that, there was no politician in the room. So while all these good guys were discussing how do we ensure that we are more resilient to climate change, we are more adaptable, the politicians are campaigning. They are not even there. They are not there to listen. Meanwhile, all these guys who were in the room, NHIS was there, Ghana Health Service was there, the guys from LUSPA, everybody was there. And these are all proper professionals who are committed to Ghana. But
the politician wasn't there. The person who would drive the policy.
The guy who's not in the room.
You know.
Somebody even asked, are the politicians here? They said we invited them. But
they didn't come. That's what they do all the time.
So, Caleb, until we have a system where we make our politicians accountable to us for the money, the time, and the effort. They are not just to show up at our funerals. We had a big discussion about climate resilience, about WASH. Now, even though malaria, we've done so well in malaria, open defecation is still a problem.
Yeah.
Because when it rains, some people's toilets are destroyed. The north, the climate vulnerability, very high.
And typhoid is still a thing.
You see where I'm going? So we have to bring our politics in alignment with our technocrats. And then we need good, honest, credible leaders on the local level who are selfless, Caleb, it's doable. We've done it in some places. In some estates you go, it works.
Yeah.
In some companies, you see what we do, our city.
Yeah.
In some communities, it works. Mm-hmm. Look at some churches. You know, so in pockets, there's pockets of excellence to tell you that when you give the Ghanaian a chance under the right circumstances, There are things. Look at the Church of Pentecost. It's a great church.
No, today
it's a world class church.
I was going to mention today the chairman of the church is going to give an account. It's called the State of the Church Address. So he'll give you a breakdown of the membership. He'll give you a breakdown of initiatives the church has embarked on. How much the church has spent. How much the church got under the year during the year under review.
So that's an example.
How much you spent
then
on hospital.
You have your Dodowa Health Center.
Yeah,
it's an example.
Ken Brighton.
East Medical Center. Yeah. It's an example. Legon, what do you
UGMC.
Call it? UGMC. It's an example. Education-wise, there are some good examples. Business-wise, there are some examples. Do you understand me? So it's not like what we are saying is undoable. Yeah. But all those guys who have done well, they, even GIMPA, UPSA.
UPSA.
You have to find a way of, insulating yourself from some of the negative effects of politics.
Yeah.
You get me? So like the Dodowa Government Hospital, there's a great leader there. Yeah. His staff are aligned to what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And the political leadership have not interfered with what he's doing.
Yeah.
You get me? And the community understands what he's trying to achieve. It works. We can replicate that in many areas. I think that if we can replicate that at the spatial and the local level, so get competent people to run for assemblyman.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think, for example, if you want to enter politics as a young person, don't go and do nooks. Go and work as a volunteer in your community and then go and be an assemblyman. When you're an assemblyman, then you can understand. Oh, if you start a unit committee member, start a unit committee member. So, unit committee for maybe give me an area, a locality. It's even too big. So, let me give you an example for School Junction area in Nanakrum. So, my just School Junction.
Yeah.
So, you're a unit committee member. You understand the issues. You understand the district level plans. So there are district level plans that you have to work with. Accountability, budgeting, community organization. You move it from there. Then you go to assembly member.
Yeah.
Then from assembly member, you can apply for DCE.
You learn advocacy.
Then from DCE, maybe MP if you want.
Mm.
I think we need to find a way of reducing the competition between DCEs and MPs. One of the problems with our MPs is that because they are development agents, they are not doing the legislative work well.
Mm.
Some people think you should let the DC be a voted position. I don't know. But if you move those who want to do development to the DC level and then let those who want to do legislation go to MP, then you have the MPs are more equipped to check the government executive.
Mm-hmm.
Then the DCs become the agents of development at the local level. Do you get my point?
Mm-hmm.
We can do it. We break it small, small, small. So I think that the local governance reform is a big issue. We should have a big conversation involving the political parties and say, okay, what can we agree on as the problem? Dan Botwe, Dr. Akwete, Kwame Nahoy, all of them in one room. All right? What can we agree on that is working at the local level? Maybe two or three things. What can we agree on? So Obiama, all these guys, what do we disagree on? They will agree on two or three. What can we realistically do together? Okay. Do we get them to vote at local level for MCE? Is that the solution? Or do we have a hybrid? I don't have the answer, but they do, right? Invite former mayors, invite former local government ministers. Let's build consensus. Whoever wins 2025, we agree that we are going to implement this change so that the district level can be free. Because by the way, if that is happening, the politicians will have less pressure on them. The MPs want less pressure. Even the ministers, they want less pressure. So if local governance is working, the politicians will be a bit happy to say, okay, at least those in Adenta, solve your problems. Don't come to Jubilee House and come and queue.
Yeah.
Those in solve your problems. Do you get it? Then you can say, Adenta is working. Can't Madina look at Adenta and copy them? Do you get me? I think we need, and I think a president can do that.
Yeah.
But in Ghana, there's too much. We are too partisan, right? For me, for example, the president is head of state. He's also the head of government and head of his party.
Yeah.
I think from the way his posture is, he's a lot more head of government, head of party than head of state. Do you get me? Fine. You want MPP to win. Ejiso. But I feel like the emphasis at a certain stage, when you know you have like 8 months to go, should be more state things, where you build the things that whoever wins can use to develop the country. You get it? So you must play your head of state role more deliberately. Head of government, yes, to defend us, to give economic development. Head of party, not so much. You get me? Because there are general secretaries there, national chairman is there, Baumia is there. So right now, focus on what you can build, institutions, so that whoever wins the election can have that legacy. So like the broad picture areas, constitutional review, issues around the local governance reform, okay? spatial planning reform, so that land reform. Okay, so you tackle the big ticket items because you don't have an election.
Yeah.
So like the president doesn't have an election now. He can say, let me take on the land issue. Let me bring the chiefs into a big national land conference and let's come up with some land reform so that whoever wins the election can have space to then bring development. But the leader is still fixated on 2024. Mahama or not. You know my point? It's not, we are not doing that. I think that's what we should do. When we do it that way, then we give it, we make it easier for whoever succeeds, as well as Baumia or Mahama or Alan or whoever, to have a chance at making Ghana competitive.
Yeah.
Then our MPs are also free from this problem of everyday money thing.
Yeah.
Then our DCs are bringing development at the local level.
Yeah.
Then our kids can go to school in peace. Armed robbery is less. We can drive to work and we can live a happy, longer life.
Water will flow through our
chest. You see my point? So there's a lot of, it's easy to say, I know. But I think we should give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I think our leaders should have a longer term and a broader view of our national problems. Yesterday, I was at another event, GIPC, talking to investors. Look, Ghanaian agencies are doing well. On that panel, I had AG's department, I had GIPC, I had Ministry of Trade, I had AGI, and then I have GRE. Competent professionals who have Ghana at heart. We're talking about international investment agreements. We have Ghanaians are good, but every time you moderate a panel involving technocrats and there's no politician there, it's brilliant.
Individual brilliance, group incompetence.
It looks like we are just waiting
to have the right leaders ecosystem. This is
the
thing.
The political system we have created has hamstrung our development. So these technocrats know what to do. For example, a lot of them talk about lack of coordination. So they gave an example. They said, you are going to negotiate what is called a double taxation agreement with another country, or what is called a national investment treaty. Ideally, you need people from GRA, GIPC, Ministry of Trade, Ministry of Foreign Affairs to work as a team, but work in silos.
Yeah.
Right, when the technocrats meet, they want to work together, but the political heads have a different agenda sometimes. Right, and then the political heads, because they also have a shorter tenure, their focus is different.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have a shorter term view. Do you get it? So one of the things we need to also do, again from presidential side, insulate the civil service from political interference. Don't appoint political apparatchiks to head these things, because you want to let the politician be a minister. He has the 4-year mandate. So yes, he wants to drive a certain agenda. But let your chief director be a technocrat and allow him to be administration agnostic.
But Bernard, how about the trend I see where it looks like politics is more rewarding than technocrat, you know, purely professional thing? So that somebody, you know, your neighbor or someone you went to school with, your classmate, who is simply an appointee or a deputy or a secretary or an assistant, is now driving a car that ordinarily, if you work for 20 years, you are not able to buy. You know, and a system that checks people's wealth. You understand? Because
when you say politics is more rewarding, we are talking about financial reward.
Yeah.
Okay, so that takes us back to what do you want in life? And that takes us to the values conversation now.
Yes.
So now, if we are well trained and we are properly screwed up ethically, that should not be the question we should be asking. Because we are not here to make as much money as we can. That's number one. And that's not an idealistic position. In places where societies transform, people who occupy public space are there because it's honorable to lead. It's honorable to be
in service to the public,
to serve your country.
Yes.
I consider this work as national service.
Yes.
All right. The work I do, I consider it national service. That's the only reason why I've done it for 20 years. With the level of pay I get, I consider it as national service. I consider shaping public opinion, asking for social accountability, doing public service announcements and interviews as public service. Fine. There are opportunities I get which will give me money, but I'm not doing the work necessarily because I want to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because my father and my mother trained me well, the educational system I went through gave me a certain mindset, the church I went to, they gave me a certain mindset around who it is to be a Ghanaian, what it means to be a journalist, what it means to be a proper public servant. So if you have people going to politics just because they want money, you need to understand that part of the moral system is broken. That needs to be fixed.
Yes.
All right. So our churches, our schools must go back to getting people to get back their moral compass. Number two, there must be incentive systems. So you talk about corruption, you are right. There must be a way in which bad is punished and good is rewarded. So you must put, it's not, it's, so I don't moralize everything. You also systemize things. So I'm not saying corrupt politicians can only be solved by good preaching. You also have to have a system where the courts work. There's accountability. People can be jailed.
Regardless who.
Do you understand me?
Yeah.
So part of the development question is ethical. Part of it is systemic. All right? Where you have good leaders who say, we will make sure the right thing is done. People must fear the courts. People must have, IOCO must work. PIPs must work. Special prosecutor must work. SRAS must work.
Yeah.
But there's a mix between system and ethics. Because if the person running SRAS or IOCO is an amoral person, they will still run it badly.
Yeah.
So it's not one or the other. It's both. It's a blend. So you can create institutions. Institutions, nothing works without people, but nothing lasts without institutions. So an institution is still people following rules in a consistent way. Do you get my point?
Yeah.
So the development question is partly moral and software and partly hardware and systems. Do you get where I'm going?
I get you completely.
So
better.
If you say politics is more rewarding than public service, it's because we have not punished illicit wealth. We have also not raised public opinion against ill-gotten wealth. Both have to work together.
To the extent that now ill-gotten wealth is becoming
fashionable.
It's becoming very fashionable, thank you. You know, and you see, so to the point that, I mean, we are what we celebrate, right? So people are not questioned where their source of income is. So whoever is wealthier is the most successful, is smartest, and it doesn't matter how honest whoever is working hard is. We judge people based on what they have and what they bring to the table. And so now people are going to school, and if a lot of young people who are listening to us will send us message, they will tell you the kind of pieces of advice their parents and elderly people in their families are giving them today is different from what our parents gave. I'm telling you,
for me,
because people are telling their words that look, go to school, work hard, and get into politics because
I'm
they
not
feel,
sure. I'm not
oh,
sure.
Bernard, I'm telling you that
I'm not sure.
Bernard, I'm telling you that maybe, if you ask people to tell you what kind of pieces of advice
let's
their elderly let's, people let's, are telling
let's,
them.
Let's use the four of us in this studio.
Oh.
Nobody here's parents will tell you to go and get enter politics to make money. On the contrary, if you say you want to enter politics, your parents will say, are you sure you want to enter politics?
Yes.
I know there are lots of people who want to enter politics. But Caleb, let's not get sidetracked. The issue we are discussing today is a question of leadership and values.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
The leadership question starts with us too.
Yes.
If young people celebrate ill-gotten wealth, it's also because we in the media have not portrayed the right values in our programming, in our cultural, in our movies and things. So what people value and celebrate, their values, is built over time. So it's not just what they are told in the mosque on Friday or at church on Sunday. It's also what they watch on television and what they hear their favorite morning show host do. So if they come and see me every day, I'm wearing a new suit, I'm flaunting my new clothes, and there's they idolize my lifestyle. I put a new car on. That's and if I'm their hero, that's what they believe to be the right thing. They look at footballers. They are changing their cars every week. Yesterday, I heard somebody talking about the CAF president. He says footballers are buying 4 or 5 Ferraris, and after 10 years, they are poor. All right, it's because of what they've been shown.
Yeah.
So everything, and I'm putting everything together to say, I don't want to sound like I am this guy who has all the answers to Ghana's problems. What I'm trying to say is that even with me as a journalist, as a role model, as a morning show host, there's something I must depict to influence that teenager watching me to value certain things. Now, if I do it well, I can't solve all of Ghana's problems.
But you have influence.
Do you understand my point? Yes. So if you say that young people don't value honor and hard work and thrift, and all they value is making money, sakawa, it's because we have failed to depict for them, for example, media collectively. If you put on the television, what our media regulators allow to be shown on TV does not inure to national development. Do you understand? So, for example, the Media Commission, together with the GIBA and the NMC and NCA, must sanitize our airwaves to say that there are some things we're not allowed to be shown because it corrupts our youth. Do you get it? We must have standards for what is right and wrong that we show them on the media scene. There must be self-regulation and proper media governance as an example of values. Because a lot of the problems you are complaining about It's back to the values conversation. And values build over time. They are soft. All right? Values are not legislated. Values, they coalesce after many repeated actions. So I'm saying, you talk about Church of Pentecost, religious leaders, they have to play their role. When you come to church on Sunday, you must come and listen to a message that will align you.
Yeah.
It must not be a message that is encouraging you to be greedy and to have unaccountable wealth. It must be a message that lets you know that whatever you do, God is watching you, and you have to do it in a straight and narrow way, and that a citizen is somebody who keeps his environment clean. A good Christian is clean. A good Christian is patriotic. A good Christian is honest. And a good Christian is hardworking. A good Christian is not somebody who has a breakthrough. Do you understand me? So even, I'm serious. So even with Sunday, when you come to see, sit in a church, the way the pastor dresses and the car he drives and what he portrays is part of the corruption of society. You need to tell people that a believer, and if you go to accurate Christianity in Titus or Timothy, it says good religion, James 1:21.
Yeah.
It said it's keeping yourself unspotted from the world,
yeah,
taking care of widows in their need.
Yeah.
And it's modesty.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ghana has lost its way on multiple fronts. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? So we in the media must come back, and I'm happy with the questions you are asking. Young people listening, don't think that they are the role models are people who just flaunt wealth.
Yeah.
Don't think that making money is all there is to going to school. Don't think that changing your vehicle and having all the, no. Honor the traditional values.
Mm.
Honor, decency,
yeah,
respect,
yeah,
modesty,
yeah,
honesty, trustworthiness. Those things are also important.
You know,
but those things are also very important.
There was a lecturer at Unimark who invited me to come talk to his students about journalism and all. And I got there early. One of the students came to me and said, the journalism, she's thinking twice about it because, you know, she loves comfortable life. And she loves to look good. She loves to live a very good life. But so far, the journalism she's seeing in Ghana, no, it doesn't.
We don't even want her.
No, but Bernard. But Bernard, hold on.
Her mindset, yes, is not the mindset wrong. We need
of service rest. And everything. Bernard, no, I understand.
We don't want her in this.
But Bernard, it also looks to me that over the years,
yes,
we've created the picture that, I mean, yes, frugality is important, right? Uh-huh. And living an honest life, living within your means is also important. But it looks to me that subtly we seem to be endorsing...
cutting corners?
No. It's like the poorer you are, the more frugal you are. The poorer you are, the more honest you are. It looks like... And we've used that as... something. So if people are, you just mentioned that people are really working very hard and they are not getting honest rewards also for what they do. Because, for example, if you look at the state of the Ghana media reports that was released last year by the Department of Communications, one of the things they talk about, which is a danger to the media profession, for example, if I'm to narrow the conversation a bit, and why young people who are listening to us will be having double minds, it talks about how poorly paid a lot of people in the media are.
Caleb, I get you, and I'm not trying to downplay what you're saying, yeah, or anything. What I am saying is that there are many problems the country faces.
Yeah.
Some of the problems can be solved at the national level,
yeah,
by a president who leads better,
yeah,
by policy changes in our constitution and high-level things. Some of the problems can be solved by religious leadership, yeah, moral leadership, yeah, moral authority kind of things. Some of the problems can be solved by the media,
yeah,
showing and depicting other things.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you are in charge of your life. Now, your mindset in life,
yeah,
should not is what is going to determine what you do. So if people come and give excuses and they tell you, you can find 1,000 excuses why you will not be a good citizen.
Mm.
But in spite of what you are saying, there are people who have the same condition who are doing better. So I am not downplaying the complaints of young people. But I'm saying that in that same neighborhood of Kasua where you say you have to do Sakawa to succeed, there's somebody who's earning an honest living. The fact that he's not on the front page,
yeah,
of the graphic does not mean that we can't see him.
Yeah.
So you, it's your choice to decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
All right. So I have decided that what was valuable to me is not a lot of the things you say.
Yeah.
And that decision, I took it when I was a teenager. I didn't take it as a 40-year-old, which is what has led me here. So at the end of the day, you must make a decision as to what kind of life you want to live, what kind of impact you want to make. It's up to you. So in spite of the way Ghana is and all the things, you decide what you want to do. All right? Yes, our leaders have to lead. Yes, our parents have to help us. Yes, the media has to do what they have to do. At the end of the day, you make a decision. The decision to become a robber is your decision. The decision to do whatever work you want to do to survive, you make that decision. Okay? If we don't tell people that they make that decision, you have agency, you have the power. You make a choice. You decide what you want to be. Yes, things have to be better. People have to do better for us. At the end of the day, you choose.
For your life.
It's your life. It's your life. So you have to make a decision. Work with other people, do what you need to do to push yourself forward.
And part of the decisions you need to make as a young person is that if you are 35, 15 or 35, male or female, there are opportunities that abound. As much as you are looking for same and you are not getting, there are several. So if you are looking for a stable, fulfilling employment, Ghana Grows Program, which is brought to you by MasterCard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow and Limehouse, is organizing the Ghana Grows, which is Igniting Hope and guides you towards career opportunities in agriculture, agribusiness, technical or vocational skills. So you can gain career guidance, counseling and essential skills training through ATVET and AGRIC. And this initiative brought to you by MasterCard Foundation in partnership with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse, as I've stated, will be available to you if you call 0308255775. And then we have great news. The Zenith Fund Form promo is still on from now until May 15, 2024. Visit any Zenith Bank branch to sign up for a free Zenith MasterCard. You heard right. Don't miss out on this amazing opportunity to get a free Zenith MasterCard. You can pay for your purchases on a POS device, withdraw cash on ATMs, and buy and pay for goods and services online. Visit any of our branches nationwide and sign up for a free Zenith MasterCard. For more information, visit www.zenithbank.com.gh. Terms and conditions apply. Zenith Bank is in your best interest.
Now, Crux Training Institute is putting together a number of their chartered professional certifications just for you. Enhance your career and be recognized globally with a chartered program that distinguishes you from the crowd. They've got several options, including financial risk management, financial auditing, data analysis, HR management, and a lot more. They also have the Kids MBA program aimed at children aged between 10 and 17. Get in touch with Crux on 055-222-2217 or 024-345-7339 or visit their website crux.edu.gh to find out more. Now, if you want water, Standard Water is your number one choice. It's quality water. It's good for your system. Find them all over the country. They're 11 regions actually, and they are still expanding to cover the entire country. Call them on 0202055703 or 0547334385, and this ad is FDA approved. Now, Mother's Day is around the corner, and Africa World Airlines is ready to make it extra special for you and your mother. Celebrate with them and take part in the exclusive celebrations in the air service. Surprise your mom during her flight by selecting a package from our list along with a heartfelt message and deliver it to her on board. Call 0800-200-200 or send an email to celebrations@flyafricaworld.com. Book your tickets now and let's celebrate mom in style.
And if you need to make an urgent call but you realize you do not have credit, or your very important conversation was cut short because you've run out of airtime, there is no need to stress, because all you have to do on MTN is to dial *506# and you get to borrow credit on MTN Extra Time. The best part is you can borrow data by dialing the same number *506#, and you can bundle data whenever you run out to continue browsing. As always, your conversations do not need to end. Borrow extra time now and enjoy the things you love on your favorite network, MTN. So it's a holiday and we're just having a conversation. I'm picking Bernard's thoughts on life and living it.
we started off with work-life balance and how people can enjoy more quality rest and give off their very best at their work. And we've segued into the national issue where we're talking about how development needs to be decentralized. We need to have competent people at the local level. And as young people who are looking to provide service or impact our world, we need to think of working through local unit committees, arising through their ranks, understanding their problems. So we need to have leadership that will do coordination, because individually we have technical, competent, passionate people who love this country and who are really serving, but we need to have superimposing a structure at the very top that coordinates things and allow things to happen, allows institutions and systems to work and function in a better way so that you and I can live a more fulfilled life. And then at the individual level, we have that responsibility to decide for ourselves what we want to do, not to live above our means and look up to people who are just living to impress, living a false life as though it is a reality. So you have a choice to make, and it's an important message also to people who are in positions of influence, whether you're in the media, you are in school, you're a teacher, you are a preacher, whatever you do, you have an impact on the mind. You can shape the minds of people. So choose values that will outlast you. Choose to impress on lives in a manner that people will say, oh, my life changed because I observed this person and that and that. So there is a moral argument, there is a moral situation that the things we look up to, we become. And then there is the point where we also need to build systems that ensure that wrong is punished and right is also promoted. So it's my own way of summarizing what we've been talking about in a very simple simple way.
Yeah, today is May Day. Let's not stress people too much.
Yeah.
We are going to pray, so let's not overdo it.
It's May Day.
Let's read a few quick comments and then see how it goes.
Yeah, there are some comments that have come through. So you can share yours to 0549-986-996, 0549-986-996. We can share some of your thoughts with the rest of the world. Nathan, we have
people,
some...
People want better work-life balance.
Yeah.
Isaac in East Yorkshire says, after spending 3 months in the UK, I've concluded that until we take our local governance seriously, we can shout all we want, but nothing developmental will happen. Most of the things we ask the ministers and the president to do is done by the council. So people who are actually interested in development don't have to be MPs or ministers to lead. The UK is electing a prime minister this year, but you don't even hear of it if not for social media. So Isaac agrees with the assertion that we need to sort out local governance. If we sort that bit out and sort it out well, things should happen. So those are the thoughts of Isaac from East Yorkshire in
that's
the UK.
In the United Kingdom. By the way, are they on holiday? Do they also have World Worker Day? Is it a holiday?
Yes, I think
Isaac,
yes,
it's a worldwide
not necessarily, because I don't think the Americans celebrate Labor Day today. I don't think they do. I think in the UK, yes, May Day or May 1 is celebrated, but I don't think it's happening in the United States.
Interesting one. Yes, Bernard, we'll
take them into a conversation with Professor Nchamensa shortly.
Yes.
She gave a lecture in 2020 on Ghana's, in fact, it's a serious question she asked, whether Ghana was about to commit ecological suicide. I think it's a very useful discussion to have at this time. So after the quick announcement, we'll air that.
Yeah, I mean, did you know that 259 stories are born every minute? Yes, 259 stories, that matter, including yours, and every experience you have helps to shape your stories into exciting adventures. Your story can shape the world, and it is powerful. Whether you're an individual, family, or business, no story is too big or too small. We are inspired by them all, and your story has just begun. We invite you to write yours with us. Your story matters. Absa Bank. And the Samsung Blue Tag sale is backed by popular demand. Score discounts when you spot the blue tag in authorized Samsung stores. Find a blue tag and instantly save 300 cedis on a Galaxy A25, Galaxy A35, or Galaxy A55 smartphone. There are huge discounts on Galaxy A05 and Galaxy A15 as well. So just find the blue tag, visit your nearest Samsung authorized store from 29th April to
17th May and save big. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, after a sound sleep as the day breaks into a busy morning, you need something to get you going. Introducing the new Morning Break Biscuits from Nutri Snacks, the morning biscuit that is a great combination of wholeness and taste. And it's affordable at 1 Ghana cedi. It's a unique blend of oats, fiber, grains with a crispy bite and a lovely flavor. Start your morning right with a new Morning Break Biscuit from Nutri Snack, and this ad is FDA approved. Now, FBN Bank is saying that they put you, the cherished customer, first in all they do. They've got great financial services that give you the gold standard of value and excellence. Wouldn't this interest you enough to bank with FBN Bank? So when you think of a bank that puts you first, put the B before the N, think FBN Bank, FBN Bank,
you first.
Now you are about to have the world at your fingertips because the wait is over. Telecel is here. Now you have everything you want and need. Quick and reliable communication, stress-free money transactions via Telecel Cash. Transforming your big business ideas into success stories with Telecel Business and more. Connect with Telecel and enjoy a world of endless possibilities, because with Telecel, there's no limit to connections. Telecel, connecting energies.
I know you need to upgrade your sofa and you're thinking of the perfect one. Let me tell you, there's no better one than latex foam. We have the V Sofa range and the L-shaped V Sofa. The L-shaped V Sofa is going for 3,100 Ghana cedis. V Sofa's price is unbeatable. It's just 6,500 Ghana cedis. So elevate your living space with latex foam, your forever partner in comfort and luxury. Hurry, your perfect sofa awaits. Latex foam is your partner for life. Now, it's crucial in today's dynamic market environment to stay informed about the performance and status of your shares. GCB Bank requests its valued shareholders to update their records with us. You can conveniently do so by visiting the nearest GCB Bank branch or by accessing our website at www.gcb.com.gh. The investment matters to you, and we are committed to delivering reliable services that cater to your financial needs. Take a moment to visit us today at any of our branches nationwide and ensure that your records are up to date. GCB Bank is your bank for life. Listen, the registration of second batch of prospective applicants at Accra Learning Center for University of Ghana's Mature Access Course for 2024-2025 academic year starts on Saturday, May 13, 2024, and it ends on Monday, July 8, 2024. This is strictly an online program. To register, applicants must be at least 25 years old at the time of application and show proof of age with ECOWAS or national ID card or any legitimate documentary proof of date of birth with at least 5 years old. Which is at least 5 years old. So registration is a non-refundable fee of 700 Ghana cedis for Ghanaians and $100 or 8 cedi equivalent for international applicants. Payment should be made into University of Ghana or UG Learning Center account number 144100201044 at any branch of Ecobank Ghana. Let the bank know that you are paying for mature program. Applicants should then register online after payment via University of Ghana website or through apply.ug.edu/admissions/mature. Online classes are held on Saturdays and Sundays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So contact us on 0303-944-582 or 0244-453-440 or 0204-657-6621. Successful applicants will be admitted into either degree or diploma programs based on performance in the entrance examination.
Now let's celebrate everything Ghanaian by showing up in outfits made from genuine, authentic GTP products. Introducing the latest GTP New Style collection with unique designs inspired by our culture and embedded with symbols that unite us as Ghanaians. You can get the GTP New Month collection at all accredited GTP dealers nationwide or visit the GTP retail store in Usu or go online shop.gtpfashion.com. Let your outfit say, "I'm Ghanaian, I wear GTP, me free Ghana." GTP lifestyle.
So So we'll be bringing you that eye-opening conversation, thought-provoking lecture delivered by Dr. Rose E.M. Enchia-Mensah as Ghana on the brink of ecological suicide. Turn up the volume of your radio for this lecture. In the meantime, if you're a young Ghanaian seeking stable, fulfilling employment, look no further than Ghana Grows Program, brought to you by the Mastercard Foundation in collaboration with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. Ghana Grows ignites hope and guides you towards career opportunities. We're talking about agriculture, agribusiness, technical and vocational skills, whether you're 15 or 35, male or female. You gain access to career guidance, counseling, and essential skills training. Join us and contribute to Ghana's growth through careers in agriculture and ATVET as an initiative of Mastercard Foundation in partnership with Springboard Roadshow Foundation and Limehouse. For more information, call us on 0308-255-775. We'll take a quick break. When we are back, we have a public lecture for you.
This is the City Breakfast Show, the city's biggest conversation.
Join the conversation on the City Breakfast Show on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag CityCBS.
City 97.3, Accra.
City FM. This is the City Breakfast Show. My name is Caleb Kuda, here with Nathan Crowell. You heard Bernard Avila, Fred Tete Jabano, our producer today, as always, Godfred Abeku Odum, the richest man on technical. So let's go into the Ghana Academy of Arts and Sciences annual lecture in the sciences that was delivered by Dr. Rose Enchia-Mensah on whether or not Ghana is on the brink of ecological suicide.
This lecture is a scientific one and not a political one. It is an opportunity for us as Ghanaians to examine ourselves dispassionately and to look at what we are doing to the environment we inhabit. We often tend to blame politicians, NDC and MPP, for every wrongdoing. Yes, they are very culpable, but they are only a reflection of who we are as a society. We elect them, and until we build a strong civil society, we will be stuck with the status quo. Please let us not use this lecture to score any political points. The lecture will be on the importance. The lecture will be about sustainable development goals, ecological suicide, ecocide, ecological grief, the environment, food, health, water security, as well as the common good. I would like us to look at a few issues affecting us: the state of our fisheries, land degradation, deforestation, pollution of our water bodies, women environmental management, sanitation, capacity building, and the need for strong institutions. I like us to think of what natural asset means. I like us to think of the fact that our seas, our rivers, our forests, and the minerals that we have are God-given gifts. They are what we say in Fanti, Ijapaze. They are our natural inheritance. God has blessed Ghana with a lot of natural resources. Ghana has a well-watered coastline. It has forest, minerals, and a wide assemblage of biodiversity. In terms of biodiversity, we have fishes, we have forests, we have all these things, and over the years, the local populations have managed this with traditional management. And at the end of the day, we have not looked after these things well. I'd like to quote Ezekiel 34:18. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture, must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed on what you have trampled and drink what you have muddied with your feet? As I said, there have been a whole lot of threats to our national heritage. And I like the slide on the threats now, please. The threats on our biodiversity. Our biodiversity is threatened by overfishing. May I have the slide on the threats to the biodiversity? Yeah. We have the spread of invasive species. We are converting our wetlands to residential areas. We are harvesting our flora and fauna. We are using pesticides. We are using destructive fishing practices. We are mining, and at the same time, adding a lot of pollutants. Murder is when somebody kills. Suicide is when you kill yourself. At the end of this lecture, we are going to ask ourselves, is Ghana on the brink of an ecological suicide? Jeff Gore, a biophysicist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and his colleagues report that when a sample of Penicillium species, a soil bacteria, is fed a diet of glucose and nutrients in the laboratory and allowed to grow at will, the microbes end up polluting their local environment so quickly and completely that the entire population soon kills itself. In essence, the researchers said the microbes commit ecological suicide. The study was published in April 2018 in Nature, Ecology and Evolution. The new research suggests that extinction is more easily set in motion than previously thought, and that once it gets started, the responsible parties may be helpless to make it stop. I'd like to say this again. Extinction is more easily set in motion than previously thought, and that once it gets started, the responsible parties may be helpless to make it stop. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, what constitutes the natural environment of Ghana? It is land, air, water, and all forms of living organisms, as well as non-living things. There are three basic components constituting the environment the world over: the atmosphere and water, of which 1% is fresh groundwater and lakes, 2% is ice, and the rest is the oceans and seas. All living things need all the three basic components for their existence. Any imbalance can threaten life on Earth. Human activity has three major negative impacts on the environment. Loss and change to natural habitats and biodiversity, predatory exploitation of resources, and introduction of alien species in our ecosystems. Three others are being perceived, that is, increase in pathogens, increase in environmental toxins, and climate change. All this involves important issues in terms of biodiversity degradation by human activities, pollution and human pollution, associated with the multiple uses of natural resources. 17 Sustainable Development Goals were set by 160 countries in September. And these SDGs will be under threat in Ghana if unsustainable degradation practices are not addressed. End hunger, achieve food security and improve nutrition and promote sustainable agriculture. Ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all, SDG 3. Ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation. 6. Ensure sustainable consumption and production patterns. 12. And so on and so forth. This is what Ghana says about sustainable development and Ghana beyond aid. Please listen carefully. For Ghana, sustainable development also entails positioning the country to systematically wean itself of foreign aid dependency and develop into a prosperous, economically self-sufficient country that is in charge of its own destiny and capable of engaging competitively through trade and investment globally. To this effect, Ghana has developed and launched the Ghana Beyond Aid Charter and Strategy, which is aimed at changing the mindset and attitudes of the Ghanaian away from a mentality of dependency to adopting a confident can-do spirit, fueled by love of Ghana, building the capacity to effectively harness the country's resources and deploy them creatively and efficiently for rapid socioeconomic transformation and promoting hard work and creativity. We'll see if at the end of the lecture we are adhering to this. Unfortunately, there are issues we need to resolve as a people, serious issues. Mr. Chairman, permit me to highlight a few. We have problem with our fisheries, we have degraded our soils, and all this goes towards our food security. Security isn't just armament and weapons. As a country, we need to have food security, water security, environmental security, as well as health security. And deforestation, water resources pollution, sanitation will do nothing to help us achieve these securities. We need to build capacity, have strong institutions, and a strong civil society. In March 2010, Polly Higgins, may her soul rest in peace, proposed to the United Nations that ecocide be the fifth international crime against peace. This is the definition she proposed. Ecocide is the extensive damage to, destruction of or loss of ecosystems of a given territory, whether by human agency or by other causes, to such an extent that peaceful enjoyment by the inhabitants of that territory will be severely diminished. Ecocide is already recognized as a crime in Russia and some countries. The crime of ecocide is set down in a code and listed as crime against peace, often alongside the four international crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, genocide, war crimes, and crimes of aggression. These four crimes are the international crimes set up in the Rome Statutes, the document that codified the four international crimes against peace. For an ecocide law to be effective, and I'd like us to look at some of the things that we are doing. The slide shows Galamsey activities impacting on the Ankobra, Bogosu, and Yabisu. The next slide also shows a forest reserve in the Ankobra Basin that has been decimated by Galamsey. The next slide, please. Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to start with our fisheries. Fishing is a very, very important activity along the coastal zone of Ghana. The coastal zone of Ghana stretches from Kita to Hafasni, and it has an extended shoreline, an extent offshore to a depth of 75 meters. Mr. Chair, the marine fisheries sector of Ghana contributes about 3% of the nation's gross domestic product and 5% of the agricultural GDP. Fish is the preferred and cheapest source of animal protein, and about 75% of total production of fish is consumed locally. The per capita consumption of fish is estimated about 25 kilograms per annum. That means that all of us eat about 25 kilograms of fish a year, representing about 60% of animal protein for fish. Now, the fishing industry is a very important part of the fabric of our society. And the artisanal marine fisheries industry is the backbone of the fishing industries. And we have the artisanal, please, may I have the other slide, please, the slide before. Looking at the overview of the marine fisheries sector, you realize that there are different fisheries, the artisanal fishery, the inshore fishery, the industrial fishery, the tuna fishery, and they all have their vessels that they use, and the gears they use, and the resources they target, and the areas that they have to fish. The four species that are of high economic value are the ones that we know as herrings, the Sardinella orata, that is the round sardine, and the flat sardine. And then we have the Angrolis species, which is the anchovy. And then we have the chub mackerel, which is the scumba. All these species account for over 80% of our landings. And in 2005, the potential annual yield was about 200 metric tons. Fishing for these species are concentrated along Cape Three Points and Cape St. Paul. And the season for fishing is late June to September, October. Please let me, I need you to understand what artisanal fishery is. To own a crew is a sign of affluence in the fishing community. So that in the fishing community, the crew is composed of relations or with friends. There are no formal labor contracts. The skipper or captain does not receive a higher share of the proceeds. However, if he is a canoe owner or a boat owner, he receives the same share going with the items. With fancy fishermen, there are specializations. You have the henra, that's the boat owner. I'm taking you through this to understand how the fabric is being affected. You have the ebwara, that's the net owner. You have the kapim, who is the captain. The jampein, who is the steerman. Hentuni, who is the health. They are all in the boat. Bosu, he is the boatswain. Henkoni, he is the net caster. Hankeni is the engine driver. And Izechir is the owner's representative. I'm sure that you've heard of people saying bosu, bosu. And that's where it comes from, the boatswain. Okay. Fishermen do not receive a fixed monthly wage or salary. The wages they have depends on the entirely on the fish they land. This is referred to as profit and loss sharing. After every fishing trip, crew members share equally amongst themselves fish of superior quality, not caught in large quantities. Example, sole, barracuda, redfish. It can also be any fish considered superior to the main catch. Such fish is called izizinam, that is fish for eating, not selling. So fishermen are the only ones who eat the good things. The farmers sell the good things, but fishermen keep the good things for themselves. Traditionally, a fisherman gives his share of his catch to his mother or sister, if he is not married, or to his wife. The women either process the fish themselves by smoking, drying, salting, or frying and marketing them. If she can't do this, she sells it fresh. And so this is how there are middlemen. That's the whole fabric of the fishing, artisanal fisheries. In each fishing village, there's a chief fisherman. He's in charge of fisheries matters in the community. And he works with the council of elders. He's elected and generally comes from a certain clan or family. Women fish processors also have a parallel organization. Now, I'd like us to look at this graph very carefully. In fisheries, there's something we call maximum sustainable yield. The output from a fishery is often referred to as its yield. This can be measured in several ways, such as the quantity of fish harvested, revenue from the fishery, this is economic, or the composite and more tangible benefit to society, that is social or cultural. The annual potential yield or maximum sustainable yield looks at the biological measure of fish harvested. And this is shown below as this diagram. The concept is that the yields from a fish stock, group of stocks of fishery, reach a certain level whereby any further increases in fishing effort will actually harvest more of the stocks that will allow the fishes to regenerate, and hence the overall biomass and subsequent yields will begin to decline. As you look at this, you realize that you have, when you are going to the right, lower fish abundance, lower catch per unit effort, smaller fish in catch, loss of species, lower value per unit weight. The yield and the effort needed to achieve it should be seen as the limit of the fishery rather than the target, since overshooting it will cause a decline in the yield. Ladies and gentlemen, Ghana is fishing on the wrong curve of this sustainable yield curve. This is reflected that the more the fish biomass is reduced, the more it has difficulty producing and growing at the current rate, and the more the fishery becomes depleted. I am sure that you are all wondering that this year we didn't get herrings at all. We didn't get chile for homowo. We didn't get that. There's a scientific reason for that. We are not doing things right. If you look at, I told you that the artisanal fisheries was 80%, the small pelagics of total landings in Ghana. From 1980 to 2014, you can see that our fisheries, the total species, are slowly declining. The pelagics are the ones that feed on top of the water. The demersals are the bottom-dwelling ones. Those are the chile. And they also are in a sad state. In 2004, So these are the demersals, the sea breams, the boricho, please go on, the red snappers, the groupers. These are good fish. And you realize that nowadays we don't get these good fish as often as we used to. We are stuck with hake. Every time hake, hake has become, and hake is an imported fish. And so please, the next slide, please. There's also depletion. In 2004, we realized that depletion of the fisheries was the difference between the catch and the sustainable yield I told you about, and that the fisheries were in a very bad shape. When you look at Gentex, that's your Chile, in 2004, we put it out that the stock was at a warning level. Sparrows was at an endangered level. All these are very good fish. Pandora, Stretchfin, all of them were at endangered levels. This was in 2004. This was work we did with the World Bank. So the driving forces facing the artisanal fisheries are the open nature of the fisheries, the difficulties the government and stakeholder institutions have in managing and monitoring the use of the common property, the local demand for fish, fish catching technology, which is very destructive, pair trawling, which happened some years ago, that is two fishes, two ships come together with a trawl between them and they trawl the bottom of the sea. And the problem is that they catch juveniles and everything. And in Ghana, there's market for any size of fish. So overfishing is a big problem in Ghana. Overfishing is impacting on the fishery livelihood through income and profit reduction, increasing competition and conflicts. Premixed fuel is rising in cost, is irregular in supply, and it has been politicized. It may run out during the fishing season. So the crew, in order to bring in maximum catch with low effort, have resorted to a very destructive fishing practice known as cycle fishing. So cycle fishing is also known as epumgalamse. Oh, seriously. And it's a term used in Ghana to refer to transfer or transshipment of fish at sea. And what it happens, it initially happened was that the fishermen will go up to the high seas in small boats and give the fishes fruit and food and livestock and take away the fish that they don't want, the shrimp boats. That is how it started in the Axim area. Then it suddenly caught on. Today, industrial trawlers licensed to fish for bottom-dwelling species, such as the groupers and the snappers I showed you, target fish specifically for the cycle trade. This includes small pelagic species like sardinella, the chub mackerel, which are in high demand for the kingfish and pepper that we love so much. And these catches come in juvenile sizes. They don't even allow the fish to grow. They come in juvenile size, and they have specially built canoes. So you look, the canoe on that side is a normal canoe. Now they are specially built cycle canoes that go and bring these fish in. At this juncture, I'd like to commend the good work done by the Coastal Resources Center and the Department of Fisheries and Aquatic Biology at the University of Cape Coast. And congratulate the Environmental Justice Foundation and Hen Pano, who are working in partnership under the FAR Jumankodo Sustainable Fisheries Project with EU and German funding for the extensive work that they have done. So the thing is that if you look at cycle fishing and canoe fishing, according to their report, one cycle trip is equivalent to 450 artisanal fishing trips, bringing in 100 tons of fish. So can you imagine? One cycle trip. So 1.5 jobs in the cycle industry is equivalent to 60 jobs in the artisanal fishing sector. And they all bring in the same amount of fish, 100 tons. And all these trawlers who do this are linked to Chinese beneficial ownership. When I say that, you'll find that they are licensed to Ghanaians. All of them have Ghanaian names on them, but they are owned by Chinese. How unpatriotic can we be? Are we not doing this to ourselves? Are we not killing ourselves? This will affect our food security. So I'm saying that cycle is illegal under Ghanaian law, attracting a fine of between $100,000 and $2 million. It's illegal. But it is going on rampantly in Elmina and along the coast. And it is affecting the fabric of the artisanal fishery. I told you that when a canoe goes, all these people, they benefit from it. But somebody can do cycle fishing from Mali or Burkina. I mean, they don't, I mean, really care. I mean, in my interactions with some fishermen in the central region, they were extremely angry because they do not think that the psycho fishers are fishermen. Because they go buy premix, go out there, the psycho fishermen will sit on the beach and have a phone, oh, come for your consignment. And I like us to see the kind of fish that are brought in. Please, may we have the next slide, please? No, the psycho, so the psycho fishes, let the boat come in, and these are juvenile fishes. But they are forced, middlewomen are forced to buy it, because that is the fish around, you know. And as I said, the fishermen are angry, and they have to buy premix in all kinds of shady places. And they have the opinion that the fishing period ban should have been both for artisanal and industrial at the same time. The reason being that the industrial fishers were fishing in the zone reserved for artisanal fishers. You remember the chart I showed you. Everybody has their lane, but then the trawlers are coming nearer and nearer. And so if this is true, it's a big institutional failure that should be corrected. And they do not consider the cycle fishermen as fishermen. But you see, the Ministry of Fisheries, in a report in 2018, October, there was a business use. Cycle fishing gets green light to officially operate in Ghana. But the minister has denied it. I think that the Ministry of Fisheries and Aquaculture Development and the Board of the Fisheries Commission have a lot to answer for. Why are Chinese trawlers having a field day in our waters? Why is cycle fishing still going on when it is illegal under our law? You see, fish protein is about 60% of the diet of Ghanaians. Cycle violates SDG 2, 3, 12, 14. And it will exacerbate poverty along the coast as it depletes the small pelagic fish. Oust women who have been middle women in the fishing industry encourage mass migration of fishers to other West African countries. Akenke fish and pepper is under siege, believe me or not. And we wonder why we did not get chili for Homowo. But these are some of the reasons. But you see, there's something called the Fisheries Transparency Initiative, which was launched in 2015. And in that, there should be a public registry of all national fisheries laws. And there should be a publication of all foreign access agreements, publication of all large-scale vessels, information on the post-harvest sector of the fish trade, information on the labor standards and fisheries sector, information on the country status regarding beneficial ownership. There is a fisheries development fund. How do fishermen benefit from the fund? How is the fund disbursed? Think that you will now go to fishing on the Volta Lake. There is already overfishing on the lake, but recently there has been an agreement with the Canadian government that they should cut down all the trees. When the lake was inundated, these trees were very important because there were submerged trees, and then there were an algae called, a primary consumer called Povilla, which became a link in the food chain between the algae and the fish. So the trees served a purpose. The trees in the Volta Lake caused a lot of accidents. So one would think that they would create ways, pathways in the lake, like feeder roads and all that, cutting down the trees along those pathways. But now there's been blanket harvesting of the trees. A lot of the trees have gone. This tree is petrified wood, extremely expensive on the world market. How are the communities benefiting from this tree that has been caught? The lake is a natural asset. Can a company just clear trees and profit from it? What is in it for Ghana? These are some of the things I see. We have a lot of lagoons along that coast. Five of them were declared Ramsar sites in 1998. And we realized that 40% of marine species including the flatfish, grouper, snappers, jack merrill, and bonga. They come in to feed and breed in these lagoons. Our lagoons have become dumping grounds. Sakumono Lagoon was a vibrant Ramsar site where people came in to watch birds from all over the world. Now Sakumono Lagoon is a pale shadow of its former self. I'm sure you pass by the road to Tema and you see the state of the lagoon. It's become a rubbish dump and it's been overtaken by aquatic weeds. And one of the fellows of this academy, Dr. Letitia Bing, has been talking about aquatic weeds for a very long time. It's invaded Sakumono. And so now it's affected the women and children who engage in the collection of shellfish for food to sell. The lagoon is also a god. And now the people around are bewildered and do not understand how this can happen. I think that these are things we need to look at. Nobody is doing this to us, but we are doing this to ourselves. We have lost an interface where 20 commercial fish species all along the coast come and breed and feed. Now I come to the highlight of the meeting today. We've messed up our ecosystem with mining, both legal and illegal. And as you look at this map, the reason why Ghana was called the Gold Coast was that God gave us a lot of gold. You see the shaded area from north to south is gold. A lot of gold for Ghana. Let me take you back and give you some history. Ghana's mining history for gold dates to the 15th century. The industry was very vibrant during the pre-independence period when mining policy was largely geared towards assisting and promoting the maximization of mineral production in the interest of the colonial powers. According to the Minerals Commission, Ghana accounted for 36% of total world gold output between 1493 and 16,000, when there were more than 30 gold mines in operation. Now, these mines were mined by Ghanaians at that time. Ghana's share of the world mineral output dwindled subsequently due to the advent of colonialism and the introduction of modern scientific mining in Ghana during the last decade of the 19th century. And this excluded Africans from participating in the gold mining industry. They only worked there as laborers and artisans. According to Fosu-Mensa, in pre-colonial times, gold mining was one of the mainstays of the economies of the Asante, the Dinsha, the Achim, the Wassa, and many Akan states. All our traditions and early Dutch and English sources mention a hunter, a woman, Nzema, Sifi, Asun, and Chufu, and to a limited extent, Kwewu, as rich gold areas. Rich supplies of gold continue to be found in Bunu, Techiman, Banda, Jaman, and other parts of Bronhafu. And looking at the map, you can see, as I said, Ghana had a lot of gold. We still do. History has said that actual mining with heavy equipment started in the late 1800s. The richest deposit, the Obuasi mine, was discovered by two Fanti men by name Joseph Ellis and Joseph Biney, who were later joined by another Fanti man, Joseph Brown. They sold the rights to the deposit to E.A. Cade, the founder of Ashanti Goldfields, because of the British government's conduct towards indigenous mine workers. While for most of its history, the main market for Ghanaian gold was the Middle East, after that it shifted to the West. At first, as I said, the industry was natively run. By the late 19th century, efforts were made by the colonial government to exclude Ghanaians in the interest of European capital. By 1930, all mining concessions were in European hands, and the industry was suffering a serious labor crisis as Ghanaians refused to work in the mines. At that time, we were proud people. With independence in 1957, the mining industry was nationalized to overcome foreign dependency and fuel national development. Excerpts from a report by the Graham Sustainability Institute of the University of Michigan and Ghanaian scientists on an integrated assessment of artisanal and small-scale mining in Ghana states that By the late 1970s, the industry, like much of the Ghanaian economy, was falling apart. Beginning in 1983, the government, upon the advice of the IMF, implemented a series of reforms, including the privatization of state-owned mining companies and the opening up of the country to foreign investments. This resulted in a dramatic increase of investment in the Ghanaian mining by foreign nationals and impoverishment of the majority of Ghanaians, leading to a rise in illegal mining. So you need to know history. That's why we study history. Partly in response, the government legalized small-scale mining in 1989, but most miners operated informally without government oversight. Now, by law, so most of the mines are in the hands of now Chinese. They came and really muddied the waters. American, British, Australian, and South African investors. By law, about 80% of the royalties from mining companies belong to the central government, and the remaining 20% is deposited in the Minerals Development Fund, of which 10% is awarded to mining agencies, and the remaining 10% to the administrator of Stu Lands. Now, listen carefully. The 10% that has been given to the Stu Lands, the administrator retains 10%, and the remaining 90% is given to district assemblies, 55%, traditional authorities, 20%, and the stools of mining areas, 25%. So you see how the money is dwindling by the time it gets there. If these funds were being used well, mining areas in the western part of Ghana will be the richest and most developed. But what do we see? Let us look at the state of Takwa, Bonsa, Pristia, Obuasi, Nsuta, Awasu, Bogosu, Akwetia, Kede, and more recently in Krofu, no comparison to Johannesburg. I was shocked to find that 27 mining companies operated in Takwa and its environs. Meanwhile, the roads leading to Takwa and in Takwa leaves much to be desired. If all these mining companies paid 1% of their royalties as corporate social responsibility directly to the region, would not those regions boast of good roads, hospitals, and schools? Hilson and Yame report in their paper, Gold Mining in Ghana's Forest Reserve, that several local organizations joined forces to lobby on behalf of the communities that stood to be affected should the forest areas be approved for mining. The most influential of these was the National Coalition of Mining Consortium, comprising the Third World Network, WASA Association of Communities Affected by Mining, WACAM, the Center for Public Interest Law, Friends of the Earth Ghana, Friends of Rivers and Water Bodies, and the League of Environmental Journalists. Coalition officers used local media outlets and the internet to publicize their views on mining in the forest reserve, arguing that approval of the proposed undertakings will lead to the displacement of indigenous groups, a depletion of forest cover, and habitat loss. Additional NGOs and research groups in Ghana, including ISOTEC, all continue to voice their concern. Recently, the Media Coalition Against Galamsey, with the CSIR, with support from the CSIR Water Research Institutes and Impact Assessors of Ghana, have campaigned against the ills of Galamsey. But what are the driving forces? A study by the African Center for Economic Transformation say that there was a lot of young adults are turning away from agriculture, which is dominated by hoe and cutlass, and going into mining. The agriculture sector is now dominated by an aging workforce and inadequate inputs in terms of seed, fertilizer, credit, and available land. Artisanal mining now contributes a third of the national gold output. In Ghana, it is estimated that 1 million people are engaged in artisanal small-scale mining, with over 4 million dependents. The major driving force is the lack of alternative paying jobs for young men who engage in illegal mining. There is also unemployment, poverty, and available gold deposits in the areas where illegal mining occurs. Earnings from agriculture are fewer than what small-scale mining brings in. Unfortunately, mining activities have had a catastrophic effect on Ghana's water bodies. A critical look at the river basin map of Ghana shows that mining occurs in practically all our major basins. Water, they say, is life. Are we slowly killing ourselves? Looking at the river basin map of Ghana, and looking at the gold ore deposits. Do you see what I see? Okay. You realize that most of the mining occurs in the Western region. I'm going to take you on a trip from the, this is the Western region, but I'm going to take you on a trip from the Red Volta to Ankobra. And before we get to the Western region, can we look at, can I have the slides of the various, can we take the trip, please? Starting from the Red Volta, please. Before we get to the Bonsa catchment. Starting from the Red Volta. The pictures from the Red Volta. Yeah, so this is the Red Volta. We are starting from the top of the map. So this is Red Volta. You see in the second picture, look closely. You see that there are people inside the stones, mining. Could you please use your, yes. Can you see? They are inside, mining. This is the Red Volta, the state of the Red Volta. The next slide, please. This is the Red Volta, as it looks like now. The next slide, please. This is the Black Volta. In 2015, it was reported that Galamsey AS have gone in there. And that is the state of the Black Volta in 2017. The next slide, yeah, this is the Black Volta. You see the amount of shenfeng on the Black Volta. This is the White Volta. You see, they were harvesting at least 1,000 tracks of sand. This is sand winning on the White Volta. Please, can we go back? And this sand winning is draining the Ghana Water Company installation, which is a source of water for 5 districts, including Tamale. And this was reported by Star FM in 2018. The next slide, please. So this is the main water system. It's been engulfed in aquatic weeds in the Oti Basin and then Pong. And you know how important Pong is to us. The next slide, please. This is the Tano Basin. This is the color of the Tano Basin. It's even better than the Pra. So as we say, half for do. The next slide, please. This is Ankobra. And that day, I was so sad, I didn't know what to do. So you know we are coming down. This is the state of our water bodies. This is the Ankobra. This is the Ankobra. And the slide before, the children were bathing in the Ankobra. You can see. And they were drinking it and washing and all that. The next slide, please. This is the Ankobra Basin. They've abandoned a river channel. They've finished what they were doing and they've just lit like that. They even divert whole river courses. Please, the next slide, please. As for Pra, we did a study of the Pra. The Water Research Institute did a study of the Pra. And these are Akimoda, Dabwasi, and Dungwa in the Pra Basin. The next slide. This is Apiankwanta, Kufufukwa Abing, and Kade near Kade. The next slide. This is Chifoprasu and Dukonofin. This is the Pra Basin. The next slide, please. This is Chifoprasu. They've blocked the water. The water isn't flowing. The next slide. Okay. So there's a problem because these metals are used. Lead, cadmium, mercury, arsenic, and they all have an impact on us. And what we are going to do is that we're going to inject them slowly over a period of time. And all these studies were done by the Water Research Institute of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. So there's even antimony. And antimony, I think, cousin is true. Arsenic, cadmium, lead, as for mercury, it is rampant in our river basins. The next slide, please. When you see this, this is the kind of exposure you get from arsenic exposure. The next slide. Okay. So all this is having an effect on our ecosystem. The problem is that when they do the galamsey, they don't even keep the topsoil. They just throw it away. And the topsoil is what is needed for agriculture. And they block the river. And it's not just Ghanaians. We have a lot of foreigners, but you see, most of them are invited in by Ghanaians. This is how patriotic we are. Okay. The next slide, please. And as for the Pra Basin, I really think that the spotlight should be shone in there. Because in the next few years, the kind of diseases that we are going to see, we will not be able to explain. So EPA, Minerals Commission, Ghana Chamber of Mines, and all civil society organizations, I'm saying that you should declare that we are in an ecological crisis. The next slide, please. So I'd like to go on to Bonsa. Can we do the Bonsa slide? The Bonsa slide, please. The Bonsa is unique in the sense that it has both gold and diamonds. A Bonsa is a sub-catchment of the Ankobra. And please go back to that slide. Please go back to the Water is Life slide. This is the former UN Secretary General on water. No single measure will do more to reduce disease and save lives in the developing world than bringing safe water and adequate sanitation to all. And Masuru, the director of UNESCO, says that water is probably the only natural resource to touch all aspects of human civilization. Please, let's go on. The Bonsa River catchment. It's a sub-catchment of the Ankobra, and is located between, in four districts, Chifuhima, Lower Dinsha, Takwa, Nswayim, Christia, Muni Valley, and Mpoho, Basa East. And the Bonsa catchment, and you remember where the Western region was? You remember the Ankobra? That is where our tropical rainforest is. The Bonsa catchment over the past years have had deforestation rates that have been increasing and increasing. And the major economic activity is open pit gold mining, rubber cultivation, and small scale cocoa and food crop. But before we do that, the Western region is supposed to be the richest region in Ghana. It is endowed with natural resources, the produce of cocoa, rubber, coconut, oil palm, and oil has been found in the Western region. Now, where we produce the cocoa and the rubber and the coconut, this is what we are doing to the environment. Going back to the Bonsa, in 2012, the BUSAC, that is the business NGO, gave assistance to Pure FM, a private radio station in Takwa, to enable them to undertake a study of the impact of illegal mining activities in the Bonsa River. The Bonsa River saves Takwa. And to address the problem, their investigations revealed that the cost of treating water for people of Takwa and its environs, as well as maintenance of equipment for Ghana Water Company, was becoming too expensive. Most sachet water producers could not get quality water to treat, and this had affected business in the municipality. The river was highly polluted, and those living along the river had to use sachet water for their domestic activities. I remember recently when there was the plastic ban, everybody thought there would be total plastic ban. But you see, there cannot be total plastic ban because these areas I've showed you, it's only sachet water they live on. It's only sachet water they live on. Another story is UWCL to close down treatment plant if mining continues in Bonsa River. And this was a report by the GNA. The water basin officer said that considering the rate at which illegal miners were operating in Rosso and the central point of Bonsa, the authorities of the municipality needed to take urgent steps to stop the problem. And this is not only in Takwa. This is the same at Bonsu, the same at all other places where Kalamse continues. And then another report by Love FM, Chrissy Debra, states that scientists have found considerable amounts of arsenic, aluminium, and mercury in the Bonsa River, which runs through communities in the Western region. Findings of the study published in the Journal of Environmental Earth Science suggest aluminium levels beyond safety limits. So any of these pollutants can result in death, and you don't want them in your body. And long-term exposure has very irreparable damage. Obri et al. In 2016 reported after a study of human health risk assessment of artisanal miners exposed to toxic chemicals in water and sediments in the Pristia Huni Valley district of Ghana, and concluded that artisanal mine workers in the study area were at risk of developing cancerous and other non-cancerous diseases due to exposure of arsenic, cadmium, lead, and mercury in their water. and they were advocating that more studies should be done. The report is there. There are a whole lot of reports out there. Do we read them? And this study was done not just by Ghana. A lot of scientists in Ghana worked with Michigan State University. It may be true for Precious Mini Valley, but it's true for all mining areas. Cyanotoxins. High nitrate levels give way to high algal productions, including cyanobacteria and blue-green algae. Some of these produce cyanotoxins with serious health implications to human and animal health. An alarm raised by a senior research scientist at the CSI Water Research Institute, Dr. Gloria Adiko, about cyanotoxins in some Ghana Water Company Limited reservoirs raised many eyebrows. Some debunked her findings, while others with no expertise ridiculed her. She was worried about the long-term effects of ingesting sublethal loads. Were men going to have increased kidney problems, low sperm or dead sperms? What of our women folk? But the GWCL rejected her findings. They took the findings out for further study. So what happened? What results did they get? Did the results confirm or debunk what Dr. Adiko said? What must Ghanaians know? Are we being kept in the dark? Just as Dr. Adiko was publicly ridiculed, the results should be made known for us to see if she has been vindicated. God help us to imbibe true wisdom to save Ghanaians from our own folly. I'm not joking. Things are very bad. Okay, the CSI Water Research Institute collected samples from all these areas. You see where the gold loads are. And they collected it from the Birim, Praa, Cobra, Tano, Black Volta in 2018. They found that the waters were very highly turbid in most of the communities, indicating inflow of wastewater effluents from surface runoff and possibly illegal mining. The water quality index classification of the waters indicated that most of the waters were all in class 3 state or were of poor water quality. And this you can see. And the, may we look at the slide before that? These were taken at stations, Ghana Water Company stations, and these results were given to us by the Ghana Water Company. And just looking at the map, the graph, you can see that things are not good. So, at his Meet the Press encounter with journalists on Tuesday, 10th April 2018, the Minister of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation, Professor Kwabena Frimpong-Bati, intimated that the task of rehabilitating the rivers and farms destroyed by the Galamsey operators was going to be both arduous and expensive. An estimate to reclaim the Ankobra put the cost at about $450 million. What then would it cost to rehabilitate the Praa, the Birim, the Densu, the Tano, Ofin, Oti, Black Volta and White Voltas? And the minister further reported that between February and April 2017, some treatment plants in Osino, Chebi, Setrahiman and Dabwasi were unable to process water because of the increased turbidity of the water. Around that time, 8 mining companies were also doing things illegally. So he told them that a multilateral mining integrated project has been instituted. But as long as the illegality continued unabated, they were going to find it very, very hard. He also told them that they had been training miners in sustainable mining. And he said that in Kibi, a company that examined land in an area found that the land was so poisoned that even maize would not grow on it. In this regard, the CSI was helping him out. Some interventions MESTI have been making have been Operation Vanguard and community mining. It would be good to have an assessment of Operation Vanguard. Though a laudable move, are they making the impact they want? With the community mining issue, some of the issue pertaining, I think, is ownership and the buying of established small-scale miners and companies to seed concessions, environmental monitoring, and what will be the effect on agricultural lands, and what kind of transparency will we have? It would be nice if the draft policy could be discussed objectively. with the scientific community and the communities around and a proper stakeholder consultation. And before this is rolled out, could the pilot be done to see how well that would work? So the quality of our groundwater, according to Yelelia, is also not very good. And lack of adequate water affects women greatly, reduce time, health, and caregiving burdens from improved water services, give women more time to do other things and even get educated and empower them. Also, convenient access to water and sanitation. Cities increase privacy and reduce the risk of women and girls of sexual harassment while gathering water. The unavailability of water in the right quantity and quality affects socioeconomic activities within mining companies. Mercury is poisonous, and can say that. And most of the waters are dying in Ghana. And I would like to state here and now that Ghana is in an ecological crisis. Why can't we be like Morocco? This picture is courtesy of a friend, Dr. Betty Ai. She went to Morocco. Look how they are enjoying their water. Why can't we do that? We travel. We see what happens in other countries. Why can't we do the same? Okay, the next slide, please. Okay, the last point of call. We've seen what we are doing to our oceans with our fish. We've seen what we are doing inland. And now we are going to go into a very, very delicate area, and that's the Kita Lagoon. We are going to explore oil there. So you see what we are doing. The next slide. The Swiss African company has been given exploration and production license to explore and produce petroleum in the Kita Delta Basin. The license makes them legal owners of the Kita Delta block, located in the Volta region. The acquisition makes them the first to explore for oil onshore in Ghana. So we have finished spoiling our waters. Now we are coming inshore. Think that we'd like to look at the soil and land degradation. Next slide, please. So this is the Kita offshore map. Next slide, please. With the soil, the major causes of soil degradation are natural causes, climate change, deforestation, agriculture. In the absence of preventive measures, the likely environmental consequences of the soil being very bad is something that we shouldn't forget. The Soil Research Institute is saying that 50% of all agricultural lands are iron pan. And when soil is iron pan, it's very difficult to grow things on it. But they have developed technologies. They have developed appropriate fertilizer recommendation, erosion control. They can even tell us where the soil is bad. They have digital soil maps. And Zhang and Yao and Sapong developed a model which predicted that land degradation reduced agricultural income in Ghana by a total of $4.2 billion. Over a period of 2006 to 2015, which is approximately 5% of the GDP in the 10 years. And they concluded that sustainable land management model was the key to reducing agricultural soil loss. Now we look at our forests. Please bear with me, because I want you young people to know that we indeed are in crisis, and to do the little that you can to mitigate what we are doing. This is an excerpt from the Forestry Master Plan of Ghana. The vision, goal, and objectives of the Forestry Development Master Forestry Commission is to contribute to reducing greenhouse emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, climate and temperature regulation, sustainable supply of timber and fuels, and reducing poverty. And the plan takes into account improve the state of the environment and conservation of forest and wildlife resources. It's about relationship between the different elements that lay claim to our land. It's about people. And it's a very nice thing. I was really, really happy to see that. Look, forests are very important. They are our natural capital. And when you say natural capital, it means that something that you cannot do without. The forests keep water in. The forests are there to make sure that at the end of the day, there is no erosion. The forests are something that God gave us to make sure that things don't go wrong with us. They minimize wind damage. They also bring us a lot of foreign exchange. They give us medicinal herbs. They give us animal protein. There are so many things. We cannot do without forests. So when you cut down your forests, which help with the watershed and keeping the water in, and then at the end of the day, you wonder what is happening when you have flooding and drought. Look at the land cover of Ghana from 1975 to 2000. Can you see the change? Can you see the change? So this was 2000. That is nearly 20 years ago. So what has happened now? At that time, there was not much galaxy. So the next slide, please. Over the years, we realized that Ghana has been steadily losing forests. By the dawn of the 20th century, Ghana was covered with 8.2 million hectares of moist tropical forest. By 1989, the forest cover had been reduced to 2.1 million hectares. And currently, we only have 1.4 million hectares. And so we realize that Ghana now has gone to a net carbon sink to now an emitter of carbon. Please, let's look at that slide, please. So this is what has happened. So now, when you look at the top 10 countries losing the most forest cover, Ghana, 60%. This is from 2017. Cote d'Ivoire, Papua New Guinea, Ghana, 60%. So rapid depletion of Ghana's forest reserve has mainly been in the transitional zone as a result of wildfires, mining, logging. And at the end of the day, when you look at the extent of degradation, you only realize that, and this was in 1995, only 2% of our forest was in excellent condition. So after all this, the Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources placed a moratorium on further exploitation in March 1996 on account of effects of mining on the environment and inadequate guidance and regulation. So at least that time it was good. I mean, people were happy that they had done that. But then they said that some mining companies had already gone in there to prospect. So then they were going to give out 2% of the forest reserves for mining. So they came up with guidelines. Now the loss of forest cover has a lot of social impacts. At that time, there were patriotic Ghanaians in the Forestry Commission who raised concerns because, you see, they were going to give out 5 forest reserves to 5 Western companies. So for Supama Forest Reserve to AGC, they said that, oh, the reserve serves as a shelter belt for revolving and mining would jeopardize the region's wildlife. The Chamber of Mines said, oh, no, nothing like that would happen. Upon Mansi Forestry said, they said that the site served as a catchment for Upon and Mansi rivers, and mining will impair their quality. They said, oh, it's only a very small bit, then nothing would happen. Chamber of Mines. The Forestry Commission said, the Tanus to Roach Channel Goldfield, the location is the hill sanctuary, it provides habitat for endangered monkeys, and is also a catchment for Chintu, Tanosuru, and Chira rivers. And removal of any vegetation in question will affect their water quality. They said, oh, no, nothing. No, that the Chira River is the only river located in the catchment which will be affected, and that mitigation measures will be carried out. Nobody followed up to find out if mitigation measures were carried out. So everything they said, they were counteracted. And unfortunately, EPA also allowed them to go in there. The Forestry Commission has done a lot. It signed all kinds of agreements. It signed an agreement to restore 2 million hectares of degraded forest land. It's been part of the government's ministerial setup to bind Galamsey. It's been doing a lot. However, it disheartening that despite all this, they do not seem to abide by the tenets of their master plan and agree for mining to go on in the forest reserves. Etiwa, a passionate letter, apart from this letter, Conservation International and other NGOs have been trying very hard, and I know that one of our fellows, Professor Tinyabo, has also been trying very hard.
All right, so wise and strong words from Professor Rose Etua Mensah, asking if we are committing ecological suicide in Ghana with some of the things we do. That's how we wrap it up on the City Breakfast Show on May Day, Wednesday, May 1, 2024. Many thanks for listening. Caleb Kuda sat in the hot seat. I was here with him. Bernard Avler was here. Godfrey Odum was on technical. Fred Jabana produced the show. Many thanks to you out there for tuning in to listen to us, even on a holiday.